Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 129 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. Let's go around the table and say hello to the gentleman this evening. Let's go to our buddy, Brian Whitney, first. Wit Dog, what's going on?
What up, fellas? How you guys doing?
All right. Next, we'll go to Paul Bissonette, Biz Nasty, out in the desert. What's up, brother?
Looking forward to hearing about these fucking gambling picks, R.A. Stay hot, buddy.
5-0, making me rich.
I'll try. And our boy, Mikey Granelli, producer down the York. What's going on, brother?
Boys, the Sabres have won 10 straight. I have a little proposal for you guys later, but I know we're going to get to the Sabres later, so I'll wait.
Yeah, we'll get to the Sabres. Huge 10 wins in a row. I think they've only covered the puck line twice in those 10 games, but they're still making money elsewhere. But the big news since our last show, Ronnie Hextall, shit-canned as the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers. People probably thought it was going to be the coach to go first. It was the GM. So what say you, Biz? What's your take on the old fire in here?
I mean, I'll say this. I was a little shocked that he went before the head coach. And the reason I say that is because, like, I feel like they've assembled a pretty good roster. Like, you go down their roster, Giroux, Couturier, Voracek, Konechny, Simmons. Like, their top six are very good. They got some decent bottom six. I mean, Jordan Wheel's a guy I play with. I think he's a really good third-line center. Their back end's good. I mean, the one issue's in goal. I mean, that's been like forever for the Philadelphia Flyers. I'm just shocked that it wasn't the coach first, and that's nothing against him. But just like, I mean, it's his job to get the boys going. But hey, I think the organization wanted to shake things up a little bit, maybe to get the boys going. But then, fuck, man, they followed up with a brutal loss to Ottawa, who came in there and shook them up.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you know, Ron Hextall sitting there, he's loving that, blowing a lead against the Senators, losing 4-3. Biz, I think you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people thought Hextall would be gone before Ron Hextall was. I mean, in a sense, it was up to Hextall. If he wanted to get rid of him, he could have, but he really stuck to his guns. He had a lot of trust in Dave Hextall, and that turned out to be, I mean, I guess the wrong decision. I mean, he's probably looking at it right now. If I'd gotten rid of him, I would at least still have my job another year, see if we end up getting into the playoffs. But you said it before, and we've said it on this podcast, that it's goaltending. Ironically, Ron Hextall, one of the great Flyers goalies, a shout out to winning the Conn Smythe for a playoff MVP when he didn't win the Stanley Cup. A goalie ended up not having a goalie is what ended up really kind of killing him. And they haven't had one in 35 years, it seems like. And because of that, it's just a team that never has consistency. You can't win in the NHL without a goalie. You can't win in Major League Baseball without pitching, in the NFL without a quarterback. It's the one key position that if you don't have it, you may win some games on offense, you may get into the playoffs, but you're never going to win the cup. You're never going to get it done, and win that ultimate goal. And when you look at Hextall getting gassed, a lot of people also brought up that the Flyers don't even play the style of hockey that the fans enjoy, that the fans have always kind of, you know, gotten around and enjoyed and called each other, we're the Philly scumbags, we just dummy people, we're fighting. I mean, they lost to Toronto 6-0 a week ago. There wasn't one, they didn't have a penalty. I mean, what Flyers fan is sitting around watching and could ever remember a Flyers team in the past getting blown out 6-0 and they're not being a fight or something, pushing someone, getting a minor penalty. So that was what seems like it was almost the last straw of just a team that doesn't look inspired. Now, is that the coach? You could say yes. I mean, a lot of people point to him, but when I look at Flyers fans that hate their head coach so much, it's like, man, this roster's good, and yeah, they're not living up to their expectations and where they could be in the standings, but they don't have goaltending. So what coach is going to be out there and get a team to win when they can't get any big saves? So it goes back to players. I know we're a player-first podcast, but you still see, you know, Hextall gone and at some point Hextall gone. And Paul Holmgren did say that whoever gets hired as GM, Hextall's fate is in his hands. He said, I don't want to say it's in his hands, but it is. So we're going to see what happens with the search for GM going on.
Yeah, I think Holmgren's just passing the buck, basically, to whoever the next GM is obviously going to probably fire Hextall. That, I mean, every GM wants his own coach. I can't imagine whoever they bring is going to say, oh, I'm going to keep this guy hired by the previous regime. So I think Holmgren's just making somebody else do the dirty work. You mentioned the goalies. I mean, we talk about this, Witz, for 3 years. We've been doing this podcast almost, and I feel like we've been talking about Flyers goalies for the last three fucking years. This is they're on their fifth goalie already this season. Only two teams in NHL history have used five goalies in the first 25 games of the season, the 89 Penguins and the 06 Thrashers. So, you know, there are goalies out there every year. There are goalies to be signed. I mean, they could have had Yaroslav Halak. Curtis McElhinney was on waivers. They just can't seem to ever land the right goalies. I mean, again, five goalies in 25 games, not good. He was there 4.5 years total. Only made the playoffs twice. You know, Philly's the city with expectations. They want to be in the playoffs every year. They should be a contender. But Hextall, they groomed him. They brought him in, and it just wasn't a success. It's going to be interesting to see what they do next. But, again, as long as they don't have a goaltender, man, they're just going to be this kind of not laughing stock, because they're not a laughing stock of a franchise. They're just not going to be a contender at all.
Well, and I mean, Brian Elliott's played 14 games and has decent numbers this year. Calvin Picard, I mean, he's played 11. He's got a 4.01 goals against average. He's still 4-2-2. That's his record. I mean, that just tells you the type of goal support they're getting and just not winning games. So I don't know, boys. I mean, shake things up. But I could imagine that if a few more performances like that continue, they're going to have to gas the coach too. And that'll be, what, the fifth of the year? I mean, I wonder what the NHL record is for goaltenders or for coaches getting canned.
Considering none were last year, as RA mentioned recently. And, you know, Nolan Patrick, there's times I watch him and you could see a dominant force in there. You know, a bigger player that could skate, has vision, has hands. And then there's other times where it just, you know, it hasn't clicked yet. Now, this was, I mean, 2017 draft, so there's plenty of time for this kid to become a stud. But you look at some of the names, and you know, you see Pettersson from Vancouver was behind him, and Mittelstadt and Buffalo was behind him, and Heskinen in Dallas. So when you pick in the top two, top three, top five, you got to hit home runs. That's just how it works, especially nowadays. Before, it used to be wait, you know, a guy gets picked fifth, maybe he'll play in 3 years. Now it's right away. And when you have a guy that you're picking that high, and you see so many moments when he can dominate, but then there's times he isn't consistent, and you see other guys beneath him in draft status, whether it be really early or not, in terms of how long ago he was drafted, you still need to see production consistently and realize and think, all right, we got ourselves a franchise-type player second overall that year in 2017. So we'll see what happens with him going forward.
It's funny that you say that. I'd be curious to know the percentage of top five picks, let's say, of – guys who haven't entered the league in their first 2 years, if they've went down to the AHL and seasoned up a little bit to eventually become what they were supposed to be of that top five pick. Usually it's like, if you don't just come in and make an impact, I feel like you just dwindle off.
Yeah, well, before it was different. I mean, I was picked in 2002 and I wasn't ready at all to play in the NHL and took my time and ended up playing a little bit, not a big deal. But you're saying that
nowadays,
Nowadays,
it's like if you don't make an impact right away, it's just like they basically not know that you're a bust, but rarely is there going to be a top, you know, 3 to 5 pick that goes to the AHL, finds his game, his pro game, and then comes up and ends up scaling up to be, well, a top five pick at the NHL draft. And you said it, it's like now the expectation is you're drafted, you fucking have a big summer, you go to training camp,
up.
And then all of a sudden you're at least a 40-50 point guy, or as a defenseman, like look at Charlie McAvoy's first year.
I know.
Like he was noticeable out there, and you're like, wow, if this guy scales up this much more, like another, like, you know, another 10-15%, we got our guy. We got a respectable top three defenseman in the NHL. I would say that by the time he's said and done, he's going to be a one.
I agree with that, but I also think that it's almost foolish the way we do. And I just brought up Nolan Patrick and you know, not maybe living up to expectations. That's in quotations because it's so early. I brought it up. But you also, guys are so young, and still not every guy is going to rip it up at 19, rip it up at 20. It's going to take people a little bit longer. But Biz, like you said, now it's brought up and noticed more if a guy isn't just carving the league up right after he's drafted. So You do have to be patient with guys, and I think a lot of teams are better than that than others. And speaking actually about some of these former high picks, we had a trade around the league involving Biz's wagon of a club, or he likes to call them a wagon, the Arizona Coyotes, acquiring Nick Schmaltz from the Chicago Blackhawks in a trade for Dylan Strome. People are saying that Chicklet's bumped to get traded to Chicago, maybe play with Patrick Kane. And also Brandon Perlini, correct, Biz? You give me some info on these guys and what Chicago can expect, what Schmaltz can do in Arizona, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's funny that we transitioned right into that because it's Stromer was third overall pick for the Arizona Coyotes. Perlini was a high pick as well. We'll have Grinnell get up what he was drafted overall. I believe he was maybe around 20, the 20 mark. But, here's how I feel about the overall trade. Obviously Dylan Strome went down to the AHL last year. He dominated. He got called up a few times, didn't have a ton of success. At the end of last season, he got called up and he had a really good run there. I think he had 8 points in his last 10 games. And, he came in this year. We got Galchenyuk. So Galchenyuk's been playing up the middle, and so has Derek Stepan. I feel that he needs to gain a step. His skill level and patience is there, because he can make plays. And other than Keller, I thought he was the second best playmaker on the team. Go ahead, Grinnell.
He was 12th overall.
Oh, shit. Perlini was that high. Sorry, I should have came a little bit more prepared. But I think he lacks that motor to bring him to maybe be a top two line center. Now he's such an unbelievable guy, and you can't teach that patience. I hope he gains that extra little step and has success in Chicago. Mind you, he had 1-1 in the game against Vegas last night. And regarding Perlini, one of those guys that his motor is unbelievable. He can skate like the wind. Some games his hands can match it. Others, he disappears for a little bit. I thought his wall work wasn't up to par for NHL standards, and so much of the game now is played against the walls. You look at a top end player like Sidney Crosby. How good is he along the walls? Can't get the puck from him. It's all puck protection. Guys are too good defensively now, and you got to play to the outside, and you got to find your holes and win the walls. So now they traded both those guys, and I hope they go there and have success. What they got back in Nick Schmaltz is a kind of a combination between those guys. He has a motor. I don't think it's up to Perlini when he gets going as fast as him. And then he also has that skill set that Strome has. So I think in return for those two guys that Arizona gave up, they got a guy who has a combination of both. And Schmaltz has put up over 50 points in a season in the National Hockey League level. So you're just hoping that you can find that again. In 2017-18, he had 21 goals, 31 assists for 52 points. This year has been a bit of a disappointment to Chicago. He had 2 goals and 9 assists for 11 points in 23 games. And, hey, I think kind of like the Max Domi situation and Galchenyuk situation, they're hoping that, hey, a switcheroo is going to benefit both teams, and that's that. Now, Stan Bowman got two guys that if one of them scales up and ends up being what, they could potentially be, then I think they got what they wanted from that trade. I think the same about Schmaltz. I think he can come in and make an impact. And that's all I got to say about that.
I was going to update the contract info. Schmaltz is an RFA at the end of this year. So, Arizona's going to have to sign him. Obviously, he's not going to walk as an RFA. Perlini is an RFA as well. But Strome does have one more year left. So the Blackhawks will have him for at least another year after this one. He's still on his rookie deal because he had the entry-level slide there. So, Nick Schmaltz, I presume you think Arizona's going to have a hard time signing him, Paul? Should be a relatively easy signing, no?
Well, I mean, that's going to depend on how the rest of the season goes, Chyka is a big fan of him, and I think they reached out to try to get him earlier than this, and I want to say Chyka mentioned that in some comments he had post-trade. If he scales up a little bit and ends up being what he was last year and he's a 50 to 55 point guy, you have a very solid second line centerman. And hey, that's a big trade for the Coyotes if that can happen. I'm not in any way, shape or form knocking the two guys that we sent off, because Pearls is an amazing guy. So is Strome. The lack of consistency with Perlini was a concern to me. And if you're going to be a top six at the NHL level, you can maybe have an off night, one in every 5 games, but it's just like if you go missing for 4 games and then come back for 4 and then go missing for 4, it's just, it's hard, man. Like you, and if you're not adding any of those other intangibles, like killing penalties or, you know, as a centerman winning faceoffs or a shot blocker or a guy who adds physicality to your lineup, I don't know. I mean, hopefully he can go find that though.
And a lot of Chicago fans, not big Nick Schmaltz fans. I mean, it's funny. They questioned his effort. You hear a lot about just taking games off. And there was a quote that Schmaltz said about joining the Arizona Coyotes. He said, "It feels pretty good knowing you're in a good organization." I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks are a good organization. So right there, it's a little bit ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but he probably just said it, and then now we're stretching his words out.
Well, here's the end of the quote. "That wants you to be here and that wants you to succeed." So obviously he felt slighted in some way, whether it was Quenneville, whether it was Bowman, whether it was the entire Blackhawks organization, teammates, but he felt like they didn't want him there. And so you wonder if he's going to go to Arizona and start ripping up, because there are times he looks dominant. He can skate. He can make plays. He was obviously a high pick for a reason. But the inconsistency is there. And if he wants to get paid a lot of money, which is kind of the rumors, and that Chicago wasn't going to be able to re-sign him, he's going to have to really bring it the next, you know, three quarters of the season that he's going to be there.
To touch on that, I haven't watched him enough in Chicago to know if he's been put in the situations in order to succeed this season. He's had a 23 games, so that was a decent sample size. If he was getting his reps, if he was getting his PP time, if he was getting his proper ice, I'll say this. I believe Perlini was given the fair shake and the sample size. Because of the guys in front of Strome at center ice, it was difficult. I would have liked to have seen him get like a solid 10 to 15 games at second line center with a little bit more skill on his wings to see if he could have scaled up in that time. But hey, man, there's pressure to win now. They got a few guys ahead of him that are proven and are one and two centers at the National Hockey League level. I mean, Stepan's had over 50 points the last five seasons before this one. So, I mean, he's proven. They know he's going to get the job done. The history's there. But at the end of the day, I think this hopefully is going to benefit both organizations. I like the guy we got back for the Arizona Coyotes. And, hey, I wouldn't count out Strome. I wouldn't count him out.
Yeah, it's not an earth-shattering trade for either franchise. That's more than a maintenance trade, too. They're obviously given Strome another location. This is, you know, the first trade for him. You hope he doesn't get traded again. But he, like you mentioned before, Biz, he is in that, you know, that top draft class that he's going to constantly get compared to these guys. It seems like he's able to forget about it when we talked to him a couple weeks ago.
Well, R.A., that's a great point. And is it more psychological getting drafted in the top five picks and not making it out of camp? How much impact does that have on these guys moving forward? And we talked to Stromer about it. It's got to fucking...
Oh, who could answer that question? Oh, I could.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Ryan, how did you feel about it?
Fifth overall, I was pretty upset. I was pretty rattled. But I went and ripped it up in the minors. Thanks for coming. And then I got called up. Never looked back till I got put on waivers and ended up in San Antonio playing golf instead of taking naps before games.
Not bad. Speaking of golf, we got a guy coming on who loves golf.
Yes, we do. We're going to bring in Jeremy Roenick, one of the best American-born players of all time. JR made his name as a Chicago Blackhawk first, stops in Phoenix, stops in Philly, stopped in L.A., just ripped up the NHL for a long time. I think soon enough you'll see JR in the Hockey Hall of Fame, but we have him joining us, and he's not only ripped it up as a player, he also has turned into a top broadcaster with NBC Sports, so why don't we go to JR right now?
This interview is brought to you by Eagle Energy. You guys all know what it is. It's the caffeine inhaler we've been plugging forever. It was in my mockumentary this past summer, not a big deal. Nicotine-free, no sugar or calories. Eagle Energy, they're the caffeine inhaler sticks. Of course, we mentioned the guarana, the ginseng, and the taurine, all the natural products it has in it. Way better than coffee. You don't get that rotten gut after. You're not going to shit your brains out like fucking Grinnell does on his dates when he brings girls to fucking Applebee's. But... special promotion, the 21 Savage collaboration is kicking off Friday. They're a little bit backed up on their regular sticks right now. So what I want you guys to do on Friday, go to the website. They're going to do their 21 Savage launch with the collaboration with, of course, Eagle Energy caffeine inhalers. And it's going to be a Biz 21 promo code, not Biz20. It's always Biz20. It's a special promotion, Biz21. Basically, I'm collabing with 21 Savage. Maybe we'll fucking make a tune, hit it up on iTunes and all that. But yeah, you guys killed it on their sale on the Black Friday and Cyber Monday. That's why they're a little bit backed up. Not as backed up as that Munson on Twitter chirping me today. He didn't order it 2 weeks ago. He ordered it Friday. Eagle Energy, caffeine inhalers, they're unbelievable. I do them all the time. Great coffee supplementation instead of the coffee. Nicotine-free. Eagle Energy, go get them. Biz21 on Friday. Not Thursday. Friday it drops. 21 Savage. Fucking rights.
And we got a very special guest. And you know when I'm doing the intro, it's somebody that I think so highly of. A local guy, a Boston guy. Not only that, played at the same high school I did. Or I should say I played where he did, for Jack Foley at Thayer Academy. Former superstar in the National Hockey League, current talking head at NBC, and one of the most well-known names in the game of hockey, Jeremy Roenick. Thanks for joining, buddy.
That was awesome, Wits.
Hey, you know what? I was getting there and there.
I'm telling you right now, boy, I could tell you guys are getting really, really good at your jobs. Not to mention all the millions of followers you've got now, but goodness gracious, you have me go to the radio listening to you guys. And then that, jeez.
A little cherry on top for you.
Found your calling. I love it.
JR, you set the way for us, man. You're one of the fucking founding fathers, man. I mean, as far as personality and hockey in the same sentence, you're it. I mean, maybe Don Cherry.
Well, I think, I didn't know what I was doing back then. I was just a little arrogant little prick, and just playing the game and, thought I could never be touched and, all that crazy stuff that you think about, but I never knew that I was carving a way for a path for after hockey, and TV and how big it's going to get. But, to be honest and to be forthright and not pull any punches, people want to hear the truth, right? They don't want to hear all the same, mumbo jumbo that, the cliches that you hear all the time. I mean, they want the real thing. They're not going to tune in just to hear cliches and hear, oh yeah, we worked hard. We gave it 100%. They know it was a team game. Sometimes they want real raw emotion, and that's what I gave them, and that's what you guys give them on a weekly basis. It's great.
JR, so you kind of mentioned you didn't know this was going to transfer to after hockey stuff. At what point were you like, you know what? Like, I think I want to do this past my career.
I really didn't think about it. When I got ready to retire in the summer of 2009, I was literally sitting across the table from Doug Wilson, who was the GM of San Jose at the time. And I was thinking about playing one more year. I said, I can pull off one more year. My body is beat up, but, I love the game so much. Maybe I can play one more year. And so I was getting ready to tell Doug Wilson, I think I want to play another year. And he said to me, JR, it's been a good run. I think you're done. One more hit to the head, It could be lights out for you. It could be, dangers and life-changing things that happen to you. I think you're done. You had a great couple of years here. You gained respectability back. And I said, Doug, what the hell am I going to do? Hockey's my life. I mean, what am I going to do? He goes, JR, you're going to have your choice of whatever the hell you want to do. You have so many choices, you're not even going to believe it. And I didn't believe him at the time. 3 months later, NBC came knocking at my door. I signed a 10-year deal for them. And I was really lucky to just get right into the TV world when I didn't think I'd, was even wanted to do that. So it was pretty unique. But Doug Wilson was right.
Wow, is that – I never knew that right when you retired, NBC came. It was a 10-year deal?
Mike
Milbury was the GM.
NBC signed a 10-year deal. We signed 2 5-year deals within that. But, it was weird because Peter Laviolette, who was supposed to do the Olympics in Vancouver for NBC, he got hired by the Flyers. So they needed needed somebody to fill in. So my agent calls him, right? And NBC, the head of NBC, Sam Flood, who was a great boss and is really supportive of us, kind of pushed back a little bit. He's like, you know, we can't have JR. He's, you know, he's really out there. He's really brash. He's really emotional. So, you know, he lets his mouth go too much.
Why would you want that on TV?
He's like, yeah, he wants to. He's maybe too controversial. And, you know, I pretty much had to lay it on the line with Sam saying, listen, I promise I'm going to represent the Peacock as good as I possibly can. You know, be the good soldier, as it may. And I think not with opinions, because I'm still very opinionated, but it's, you know, it's making sure the social media is clean. That, you know, I had my own podcast. I said fuck one time and I got the call. Can't say fuck.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm talking about fucking.
I'd be in prison.
I'm talking about girls blowing ecstasy up my ass through a straw at music festivals. I ain't even getting in trouble. Just kidding. I didn't.
Yeah. No, that doesn't bode very well for NBC. So I've been pretty lucky to be involved with a great company. And, you know, I think we've expanded the game of hockey a lot with the way we've aired it, you know, the different styles and personalities that we have. You know, Mike Milbury and I going at it all the time is always.
Oh, I was just going to ask. I was just going to ask that. Like, I love the different personalities in hockey. Like, Babcock, to me, he's a personality. Pierre Maguire, he's a personality. You, of course. And, like, I rip a little bit on Mike Milbury, but I fucking love listening to him because you never know what's coming.
No, not at all. And but tell you the truth, he doesn't even know what's really coming, too. So, you know, Mike just doesn't give a shit about, you know, what you think. You don't think about what he says. Nobody takes a beating more than Mike. It's so funny because every time I'm in the airport, everywhere I go, and I swear to you, it happens all the time. I get somebody from wherever, St. Louis, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Dallas, LA, and they say one thing to me all the time. Why does Mike Milbury hate our team so much? And I'm like, hey, listen, if you're not a Boston Bruin or anybody, he doesn't like you anyway. So who cares what Mike Milbury says? He's going to give you the honest truth, right? So that's why he's so polarized, right? Because he'll just tell it like it is. And if you don't like it, which a lot of times seems to be every team in the league, but Mike is very, very smart. He's an extremely good hockey man. And he's passionate about the game. And, but again, he's a Boston guy, Wits, you know.
Oh yeah,
we tell it like it is. There's no bullshit, man. If you don't like it, you know, take your ball and run home. See you later.
So he's taken the evil role in media, like he's embraced the evil guy.
Yeah, but I still don't think that he likes the attention that he gets when he's in the arena.
Oh, really? So he's a little sensitive. I
just think he thinks he's unfairly judged, and maybe that might be. But you know,
do you guys go eat on the road together?
You know what? You take Mike out of the studio. You know, I kid that we love to hate each other, and we go after each other all the time, right? And you know, we have very different types of thought processes of how we see the game. Well, you should see us watching the game. We complain, we yell, and we argue with each other about plays right in studio, right? And the kid takes it onto the set. But you get him out of the setting, you get him in a restaurant, you get him in a social environment, guys, he is one of the most fun, one of the best storytellers, and he will have you laughing for hours.
We gotta get him on the pod then.
You think he'd come on?
Oh, absolutely. 100% he would.
Oh,
you kidding? He would love it.
I kind of want to let him lay into me because I took a shot at him on Twitter one time saying, if that guy can have a job out of hockey, I'm fucking set.
Oh, see, that's perfect. It's a perfect leeway into the show. Then you'll have an hour's worth of content over the yelling.
I'll just stir the pot and get him going like you do on television.
Yeah, but we can all deal with that. They're, you know, hey, listen, we've all been punched in the mouth a few times and give some punches back, but it's not personal. It's all good.
Hey, we better be able to. JR, I got to get, as great as this post-playing career has been, I think people sometimes maybe forget how incredible your playing career was. And I'd like to go into the beginning of it only because a local guy, I mean, yourself, Tony Amonte, it's kind of like you were the kids my age idols. You guys were starring in the NHL from Boston area. So your career was just incredible. And going into Chicago, you know, you were this highly touted prospect. who were some of the veterans on that team? I can't even imagine the names of guys that were at the end of their career when you came in that you'll never forget your first few years.
Oh, there's no question. And it was really weird. You know, I went to Boston College for 5 minutes and then learned what a syllabus was, right, at 18 years old.
Smell you later, pigeons.
Yeah, see you later. You know, school was not my bag, baby. It was not my bag, that's for sure. So I go to Chicago. The first guy I walk into in Chicago is a guy named Dan Vincelet. Okay, Dan Vincelet was a third liner, winger, but he didn't have any clothes on. And I'm telling you, he was the hairiest man that I've ever seen in my life. He had so much hair, Sasquatch would take pictures of this guy. Right? That's how hairy this guy was. And he had a receding hairline and no teeth. And I swear to God, I said, This is where I'm coming to play. I mean, this guy looks like he'd eat my kids and spit them out. You know, and I was like scared to death. He had more hair on his chest than I had on my entire body and scared the shit out of me. I wouldn't get dressed in the locker room. I took my clothes bag and went into the bathroom and changed in the bathroom stall. Literally, I was so intimidated.
It's weird how Doner talks about it too. When he came in as a rookie, he would walk out and use the public restroom because like, you just didn't want to walk by the vets because they would just start ripping into you.
Dude, I was 150 pounds. Swear to God, 150 pounds. I mean,
that's
you know how embarrassing
all
that
you
is.
Then?
Yes, 155 pounds my first year. Dude, you know how embarrassing that is standing around? I barely had hair in my nuts, and these guys are like, they look at me like I'm their number one draft pick. I'm gonna come save this fucking team. Come on, it was like that's intimidating, man. That's an intimidating situation to be in, and I was like, I mean, Doug Wilson was my first roommate. Kind of how it goes back to what the story I just told you earlier about retirement. Dennis Savard and Steve Larmer shared an ashtray in the locker room when they'd smoke in the locker room. And, you know, we had Al Secord, I told you, Steve Thomas. I had a lot of good guys. And Steve Thomas and Doug Wilson and Keith Brown and Savvy taught me how to play cards. They taught me the wrong way. They took
Jesus.
So much money off. They took so much money off me as a rookie and laughed. And you know, I've lost money ever since. It's been 30 some odd years now. And I think it's right because they took advantage of me as a young kid. And it's haunted me ever since.
JR, do you want to talk? I've heard some rumors about some legendary card games in Phoenix on the plane.
So we were a bunch of degenerates. There's no question. I won't mention all the names that were involved, but we got into a time in the mid 70s. I mean, mid 97, 98. I was going to say 97, but I think it was 98. We were playing card games, and you wouldn't come on the plane or on the trip without at least 20 grand in cash on you. We would start playing, dealer's choice. We're playing guts. We're playing in between. We're playing a game of guts, and I think the ante was 500. And it was if you lose, you have to match the pot. Now guts, we played a 3-card guts poker style. So if you got three of a kind, best hands, straight flushes, all that stuff, which left a lot of, there's a lot of possibilities there. Well, we had four or five match pot losses. So it goes from 2,000 to 4,000 to 16,000 to 32,000 to 74,000. Next thing you know, we're in a game and there's $102,000 in the pot. And I had a straight, like a 9-10 jack. And I'm like, now I'm shaking like a leaf. And I think it was our captain had, when all was said and done, 1, 2, 3 drop. It was me and the captain. in for the 102,000, and we're both shitting and telling them, you know, what do you got? No, what do you got? No, tell me what. Shut the fuck up. What do you got? And none of us wanted to show the hand. Everybody's like screaming at us to show the hand. Both of us were so afraid of losing the pot. It's a $102,000 match pot. And so the captain, being the captain, you know, says, listen, we'll split it. And I said, done. And all the guys start screaming, you can't do that. I mean, the fight and the yelling and the match that went back and forth.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, the scream. And so, you know, the captain put a big stop to it. He goes, listen, I'm the captain. It's not your money. It's our money. We lost the last two hands. You know, shut the F up. You have no, you know, you didn't have the balls to stay in. Shut up. We're splitting the pot. And I was like, thank God. So we did flip the cards over. Well, the captain had a flush. I had a straight. I would have lost. I'm like, thank God. Thank God he got a little nervous.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah, hey, pretty crazy.
Hey, so another fun one is I heard about you was the time it was Super Bowl and you had the pilots announcing the wrong score just to fuck with everyone. Tell that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, again, we're a lot of gamblers, right? So, and I know, you know, a couple of us were a little bit bigger than others. And let's just say there's many thousands of dollars that we know, but we're on the plane during the first half of the football game. And I went up to the pilot and I said, listen, the guys are going to come and ask for updates. Just do me a favor, just whatever you do. And I think it might've been the Patriots that were playing. Make sure the Patriots are losing every time that you say something and make it sound like really bad. Right. So it's so funny. So they come over with the first update. We had an update from the Super Bowl. We just called down to the, you know, down to the tower. You know, I don't know who it was. Patriots are down 14-0 late in the first period. And you hear the guys, you know, the guys that are gamblers, right? The scream, the screech that went through the airplane. Mother, you know, screaming. What's going on? It's too, you know. And we're like, don't worry, it's early. Second quarter comes around. It's 28-10. So now it's 18, not 14. They're like, how's there so many points being scored in the Super Bowl? And how could they be? The guys were losing their minds until we finally got down and they got serious. They could finally see what was going on with the games. And I was laughing. I'm like, I've played a lot of good practice.
Well, fuck, some of these guys probably had 20 can a game, and you're just playing with their emotions like a little puppeteer.
Are you kidding? 20 grand? That's on the lightest
side. That was the first half.
Whoa. You guys, you guys were playing like 50, 100? What's wrong with you guys, man? That's insane.
You want to hear my best gambling story, which is terrible?
Yes. Yeah. Right now.
Yeah. This is a long time ago. You know how you get these tips and everybody says, oh yeah, these guys are, you know, these guys have injuries. They're not playing. I got this tip a long time ago. This is like 2001, 2000, you know, University of Manhattan is going to win. It's going to win outright. They're getting 7 points, so on and so forth. I'm like, oh, really? Yeah. Dumbass that I am, you know, taking a tip from some Joe Blanc down in Florida, you know, that probably tells me one thing and tells 10 other guys the opposite thing. But I didn't know how this game worked. I was just a dumb 25-year-old or dumb 30-year-old. Anyway, so I take this basketball team, this University of Manhattan, and I parlay them with every team that was playing that night. It was like 25 games. So 25 times two with one. I had like 50 bets all on one game, which was Manhattan. So if Manhattan wins, I'm cleaning up. No problem. Well, it just so happens that with about 5 minutes left, they're up one. They end up losing by 10. And I had this thing. I think I had this thing parlayed $2,000 to every team and playing that night, just because that one team lost. I lost everything. So
Vegas
liked me a lot then. That's for sure. They liked me at that time.
It's kind of a gambling story of like Vince Young when he found out guys were flying private. And he thought that that meant you had to buy every seat in the plane so you could fly by yourself. Have you heard that story? He went to United.com and got every seat on the flight.
Yeah, so and I heard there were private. Two people. I heard there was like a couple on there like, what the fuck?
Like, sir, can I see your tickets? That. He's got 100 tickets.
That's so good.
Yeah, I'm just going to give tickets away. I don't know.
Hey, JR, I heard one of the Jeremy Roenick stories that I've always heard was that there was a time, like, you know, you'd have a Sunday matinee game and there'd be a TV timeout in the third period and the NFL scores would be, you know, going around the building. All of a sudden, Jerry'd be like, fuck, the Redskins are down.
That happened nightly. Nightly. Every time there's a commercial, a lot of our eyes tend to the scoreboard upstairs.
Hey, JR, you're smiling and laughing. You're minus three. You're coach. What the fuck are you smiling about? You just threw a pizza last shift. And you're like, yeah, buddy, but I'm up a fucking 100 G's, babe. Put me out there. Let's go.
It's, you know, hey, listen, the dumb things that we do as kids, right?
Yeah.
Like I said before, you know, I had a big ego. And I didn't think I could be touched. Nothing can go wrong in my life. And obviously, I was not very smart, but you know, you live and you learn, and that was definitely some learning experiences for me.
JR, what was it like playing with Chelly? Like, you got any good Chelly stories for us that he'd be okay with you telling?
I'm telling you, you want to talk about a guy who lives and breathes hockey. I've never seen a more passionate guy about the game. I've never seen a guy that loved the game more. I've never seen a guy who wanted to be around it more. Always the first in the locker room, and swear to God, he would work out like a maniac. He had our trainers bring a television into the bathroom, and in our bathroom we had our sauna, and he would ride the bicycle in the sauna and put the television outside and ride it for about 45-50 minutes. He would ride the bicycle in the sauna. And, you know, never seen a guy drink more beer and eat more chicken in my life and be shredded from, you know, from head to toe. And still today is probably in better shape than most players. But we call him Captain America, man. He is the ultimate leader and the guy that will stick up for you. He's the one guy really that didn't care who you were. He was going to make sure everybody was on the same page. He talked to me and would rip me down if he saw me, you know, saying something I shouldn't, act in the way I shouldn't. And he wasn't afraid to confront me when a lot of people were at the time, to tell you the truth. That's a real friend, man. He's the best.
I've actually always heard that not only the bike and the sauna, but the boys would be out and be a late night. And no matter what, it was like 6:37. He's at the rink doing that. Like it never missed.
100%.
Yeah. That's incredible.
100%. There's two captains that I thought were the epitome of true leadership, and that was Keith Tkachuk and Chelly. Keith Tkachuk would always be on the bike in the morning. And you know, when young guys would come into the locker room, he'd be riding the bike. He would give them shit, saying, you know, how come the captain scored 50 goals is riding the bike and you're just getting to the rink now? You know, he'd play guilt games with these guys. I mean, he would make sure that these kids were accountable, took care of the trainers better than anyone on the road or at home. And, you know, it's just, you talk about being tough and play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Walt was just, he's a monster.
I'm looking through Hockey DB. It's insane to see some of these numbers. I don't know the backstory on after 8 years in Chicago. I mean, you came on the scene, you know, 300-point seasons in a row, became a superstar in Chicago. What was the exit there when you went to Phoenix? Was it free agency? Was it a trade? I just don't remember.
Yeah, it was a trade. I got traded for Alexei Zamenhof, first-round pick. A guy named something Mills. I don't even know what his first name was.
Usually not a good sign. Pick,
not a great sign for them.
Yeah. Some money. And I think that first pick turned out to be Cleary. Dan Cleary, who played for Detroit for a long time, had a really good career. So there's three or four players for me in 96. You know, again, you know, it goes back to my attitude and yeah. You know, You know, I wanted a contract. The Hawks didn't want to pay me as much as I wanted. And, you know, and I didn't handle it the way that I should have. And, you know, you can't fight a team, so to speak, and think you're going to win, especially back then. It was a different mentality. You know, the owners run their team the way they want to. And I challenged that, you know, that theory, and I lost. And, you know, I look back at it, and this is one of the things that I regret is, you know, having that confrontation, being the way that I was, and ultimately led me to be traded out of, you know, one of the best cities in the world, in Chicago. So again, it's that live and learn sort of aspect that, you know, it humbles you, but you always sit back and say, what if this, or what if that? And I find myself doing that a lot.
Well, then you came over to Phoenix, and man, I think a lot of people have a, you know, a bad picture of their fan base and stuff. But when you guys came here and you were downtown, that fucking place was rocking.
Dude, we rocked it. Are you kidding me? We had 16,723 to be exact. And the reason I know it is because it was on the screen every single game. We sold out. We had the whiteout. We made the playoffs, you know, pretty much every year in Phoenix. And it was, you know, we had some dynamite teams there. But, you know, Phoenix can be a really, really good hockey market. And I think it will be again. Hopefully their team is a little bit better this year. They got some good, really great key pieces, you know, into their lineup. So, you know, I still live there. I'm passionate about it. I would like to see that.
Well, you know what's big too, JR?
Yeah.
You know what's big too?
In the 90s, we were awesome.
Is the fact that all the other major sports right now are struggling. Like the football team's not very good, neither is the NBA team. So if we can pounce on this opportunity, and now that we're on the rise, I think it's going to help out a lot.
Very true.
And speaking of them, Rick Tocchet, the coach. Oh my God, that guy is the best.
I can't even. There's not enough adjectives for me to talk about Tock. I played with Tock. The reason I chose to go sign in Philly was because of Rick Tocchet. I played with him in Phoenix. Then I followed him to Philly. Heart and soul guy. Probably one of the toughest players ever to play in the National Hockey League, and could score goals. And he is the perfect guy to be running that team. He's not going to let anybody get away with any shit. He's going to tell them what it's all about. He's not going to pull any punches. And if he doesn't like what you're doing, you're not going to play.
And he can look you in the eye and say it, and no one can look at him and say, well, what's this guy saying? He never did it. Like, when that guy's telling you to fucking do it, what are you going to say back?
You're not saying nothing.
And by the time they grasped that new system, second half of the year last year, you could see it, man. Shit just changed quick, and it was good. I was happy.
Yeah, they lost the first pick because they kept winning hockey games.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? I love Tock. Tock's the perfect guy for that team.
So give me – I'd love to know, because I know you were involved in all this shit, but your number one prank you ever pulled on somebody, because you were dishing them out for sure.
Have you guys ever heard this bit, the practical joke I played on Torrey Mitchell and Devin Sediguchi?
Oh, is this the trip? Is this the trip? Oh, to the desert?
Yeah, the Vegas.
Dude.
Yeah, the Vegas.
I got to hear this.
Torrey Mitchell told me this in person, and I was blown away.
Yeah, this is a good one.
This is fun.
So you gotta deal with me for a second, because it's kind of a lengthy one, but it's a good one.
No, hey, listeners,
as long as you talk clearly into the phone, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell before you start, listeners. It's long, but at the end, are you shitting me?
Yeah, I'll try to keep it a little bit quicker and get to the point. So I was a big fan of Scare Tactics. You ever seen that show Scare Tactics, where their friends set up their friends to get. They get pranked by, you know, Hollywood people, by literally Hollywood, real special effects people. And it's believable. I mean, it scared the shit out of people. Well, I love this show. You know, go on YouTube and just type in Scare Tactics and watch videos. You can watch them for hours. So I called Scare Tactics and said, I want to play a practical joke on a couple of guys on our team. We're going to go to Vegas before the season starts. And I think this would be a great team bonding thing. Well, Torrey Mitchell, Devin Sediguchi were two of the young guys in the team. So I set up, we got to Vegas. I set up a guy to sit at a blackjack table with us. So we're playing blackjack, and he starts talking about this party. You guys know the parties that you see on television where there's hot girls running around with just their bikinis on, some not with the bikinis on, you know, drinks everywhere, pool party, you know, that kind of type of look. Well, this guy talks up this party like it's one of those. So Mitchie and Seto's eyes just light up. They're like, we got to go. He's like, well, if you want to go, you know, here's the password, here's the address, go. And I'm like, guys, we can't go. We can't leave the boys behind and settle on them. But we got to go just for a little bit. Let's just go at 9 o'clock. We'll be back by 10:30 and we'll meet the boys out. I'm like, okay. So we get in the limo. We go outside the city to this mansion. So they hired and rented a mansion in Vegas. And they set this thing up to the nines. We walk into this mansion and these two big security guards, I mean monsters, stop us at the door and say, what's the password? And we said the password was Dakota. So they let us in. We go into this big, we go into the living room. It's a big living room. There's people mulling around. There's weird music being played. We sit on the couch and automatically right away, Mitchie goes, JR, this is not the party I thought it was going to be. I don't feel very comfortable. We got to leave. I'm like, leave? We just got here. I'm not going to leave when we just rolled up and you don't even know what kind of party this is. It's like, all right. So I say I got to go to the bathroom. I go into the garage. I have this production team puts a blood patch, a blood jacket on me underneath my clothes. Okay. Go back in. And so now we're starting. Now I have the lights go down and the head of this party brings out this girl. Now everybody stands at attention in this room. The music goes down and the leader of the party says, you know, here's our feature of the night. It's, you know, Yolanda or whatever her name was. And she's going around the room and all she has on is a pair of her panties on. That's it. No top, no nothing. And everybody's looking at her and touching her and feeling her. And she's going around and everybody's taking, you know, smelling her. And they come around to us and Seto's like, what are we having a 30 something or something here? What's going on? And Mitchie's like, I'm not touching her. I don't know what's going on. So Mitchie's like, listen, Jer, we gotta get out of here. I'm really not comfortable. Like, this is not like, I'm a good judge of like when I get uncomfortable, we gotta leave. We gotta leave right now. I'm like, dude, just settle down, man. Don't want to draw attention to us. We're not even supposed to be here. Right. So, all of a sudden, the waitress comes around with trays of shots. All this red, and in the shot glasses was like red, red, red liquid. And I wanted to make it look like blood, right? So we take it, and Mitchie's like, I don't want one. And I'm like, what is it? What is it, Seto? What is it? And Seto tastes it. He goes, oh my God, dude, I think this is blood. I swear this is blood. And Mitchie stands up and starts running for the door. I'm like, Mitchie, get back here. Now you really don't want to leave it. That's blood. And there's a girl running around this place, and all these people are looking at us. We can't leave now. And Mitchie's like, dude, I'm swear to God right now, I'm going to cry. I'm so scared right now. I got to get out of here. I was like, well, just give me a second. Just give me a second. Let me just, you know, I will leave in 5 minutes, right? So Mitchie sits down, and all of a sudden, the music just starts blaring. The lights go down. Everybody stands up in the room and puts on these Cirque du Soleil masks. You know, the ones with the big noses and the feathers coming out, the real freaky, freaky, freaky masks.
Yeah, they're weird looking.
Everybody starts humming, right? And in through the two opening doors, a table is rolled into the middle of the room that's covered. And Mitchie's like, dude, what is that? What is going on in here? What's going on? And the leader of this group, they all gather around this table, and the leader pulls the blanket off of the table, and it's the girl, okay, obviously with special effects, and her whole stomach was cut open, exposing her whole insides, blood and her organs and everything, and she's laying on the table with her total stomach cut from neck to her belly button, right? And everybody's hovering over the table, and the leader of the group grabs a piece of, like, part of her liver, what looked like was her liver, and bit it and said, it tastes like chicken. And everybody dives into her and starts eating her, right? It's like taking pieces out of her and eating her. So it's like one of those like one of those zombie parties or whatever, you know, like the Eyes Wide Shut where it's just really weird. So I freak out, okay? And Mitchie's standing there, sees me freak out. I start running for the door. The two guards that met us confronted me and started stabbing me with the knives. Now, remember, I had the blood patch on. They start stabbing me with these knives, and now all the blood starts popping all over my chest. I'm bleeding all over the place. I fall to the ground and pretend that I die in the middle of the room, right? And everybody's looking at Mitchie and Seto, and Mitchie screams, "They killed JR! They just killed JR!" And he runs, and jumps on top of the bar because there was an 16-foot bay window in this living room, okay? You know, it was one of those big bay windows with had dividers in it. Mitchie jumps on top of the bar and runs full speed and jumps into the window, trying to get jump through the window, and he gets bounced back. It's a pretty thick window, and he tries to do it again. He runs back, runs to the window, dives into the window, and gets back onto the bar. And everybody's looking at him, you know, now looking at him standing up on top of the bar, and he's screaming at him, "Stay away from me, you vampires," or whatever he's saying. He's yelling, calling them vampires. "You're not going to eat me. They killed JR. And he's screaming at me, right? "Stay away from me." He's screaming at these people. And they're like, they still have the masks on, and they're like trying to settle him down. So Mitchie looks through the house, and then across the house, he sees blinds, metal blinds. So, you know, you think you see metal blinds, window, escape. Mitchie jumps off the bar, runs through the house, past all the people, and doesn't slow down a bit, and goes head first through the blinds, right through the window, head first. You know, you guys have seen The Wizard of Oz, right? Remember when the lion runs down Oz and jumps out the window? That's what Mitchie did. Jumped right through a double pane window with all blinds on it, and then gets up, runs, jumps over a fence, jumps over another fence, actually jumps into Wayne Newton's backyard, and starts running through Wayne Newton's yard where all of his horses are. And these horses start running right next to him, and he's crying, he's screaming, and we're all we hear is, "We got a runner. We got a runner." All those studio producers, right? And it took us about an hour and a half until we found Mitchie, you know, trying to get out of Wayne Newton's backyard to let him know that I really wasn't dead and that these people really weren't going to eat people, and that it was just a big practical joke. Meanwhile, he had, you know, cuts all over his body. Luckily, nothing major happened. It could have been backfired big time. But I remember we were playing cards that later that night, and every time he wanted a hit, he would put his hand on, you know, the hit, and his hand was still shaking two or three hours after the practical joke. it scared the living daylights out of him.
I remember it wasn't Tori Mitchell. I think Ryan Klo told me the story. And the funniest part about it was that he said that Tori's like, "JR's fucking dead. JR."
Yeah, that's what he said. He said, "Okay."
And then he found out, like, "Wait, no. JR's not dead. I saw him die."
Yeah. and the whole time, Seto is standing there frozen solid. He's so scared. And all Seto was saying, "All I gotta do is eat her. All I gotta do is eat her. If I eat her, I don't die. All I gotta do is eat her. If I eat her, I'm not gonna die."
You guys have all the audio on this?
Yeah, I got all the audio, and I got the audio, and all I hear was Seto saying, "All I gotta do is eat her. All I gotta do is eat a body part. All I gotta do is eat a body part, and I won't die. I'm not gonna die. I'm not gonna die. I'm not gonna die." Mitchie said, you know, when I was growing up, my dad said if I was ever in trouble, get out any way possible. I saw blinds. Blind means window. I was gone.
You mentioned it too. Like, fuck, have they ever done this where someone seriously injured themselves?
No, that would have been bad.
Think about it. What if it was he jumped out of a two-story window or something?
I said that. I remember. I Doug Wilson, your old roomie would have wanted you dead.
Yeah, I know. I know. The way, again, looking back, stupid things that we do, things that you learn. Yeah, but I have the video at my house, and one day I'll show it.
One of the last things I wanted to ask you about, JR, was, you know, you got to play in San Jose with like Joe Thornton, Marlowe, like that older group of guys. I mean, Pavelski was, you know, a little younger at the time, but just fucking some legends there.
Yeah, Joe Thornton, I think still is probably one of the most favorite teammates of every single person that plays with him. You talk about a guy who loves life, loves hockey, loves his friends, loves being in the locker room, that loves being on the road with the boys, has the most, you know, happy-go-lucky personality, talented. He is so looked up to and so revered in that locker room in San Jose. He's a god. And there's not one person that I've ever run into that has not met Joe Thornton that doesn't think that he is absolutely the best guy, one of the best teammates that you can ever have. Awesome.
Fantastic. To back that up, Whit, I was in Vegas one time, and this is when I was playing in the American League. And sure enough, he was at a club that I went to. It was my first ever time to Vegas. And then I heard from my buddy who was a host that Joe Thornton was there. So I went up and said hi to him. I'm a nobody. He doesn't know the fuck Paul Bisnez. He invited me into his table and like gave me a drink. I think his brother was there too. And I was like, holy shit, man. Like there couldn't be a nicer guy. Like he fucking invited me into his table to give me a drink. And I was playing in the coast at the time.
Yeah. It doesn't matter where you are, who you are. Joe Thornton's going to treat you with respect and love, man. There's no question about it. You know, we've all had great teammates, right? You guys have had great teammates. You know, I never had the pleasure of playing with both of you guys, but I'm sure I would say the same things about you guys. I mean, being a hockey player and being in that locker room is a special thing. There's some guys that are just way more noticeably passionate and fun than other people, but still, it is such a close family in there, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've been around a lot of athletes, you know, and all the, you know, celebrity golf stuff you type do, and I still think hockey players, and maybe it's because we're biased, we are them, but they're the easiest guys to get along with, and I think that's what makes it so special. But we've taken a lot of your time.
Before I go, Whit.
Yes.
So I was just having dinner with Catherine Tapp, and I told her I was coming on the show with you guys, and she got pissed. She goes, "Why the hell am I not on that show?" I said, "I got Ryan Whitney his job. Like, he owes me. He's got to have me on the show." I said, "I'll make sure."
That's a known fact. She got me my job at NHL Network.
Yeah, so she says that you owe her, and it's what she wants for that job that she gave you. She wants to be on Spittin' Chicklets with the two best. She was on my podcast a couple years ago when I had my podcast, and she was great. She's a lot of fun. She'll have some fun with you guys. And she knows the game, too. Trust me, she's the best.
Yeah, she is. All right, JR, you have to promise you'll come on again this year.
You guys call me whenever you want. Whenever you guys want to call me, if you have something you want to do, just you have my phone number, you can call me anytime. You guys are the best.
All right, that means a lot. And, JR, I think 2019 hopefully is the year it's about time the Hockey Hall of Fame calls. Check them out on NBC Sports, and thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. You guys continue success. Listen to my son, by the way. You guys are like gods to my son. He listens every week.
So tell him to get your credit card and buy some merch. Let's fucking go, Pops.
he probably has already. I wouldn't put it by him. Trust me.
All right, JR, we got to tee it up soon.
Awesome. Sounds good, Whit. Be good. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, see you, JR. Thanks for everything, buddy.
That interview was also brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a simple way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're catching your favorite musician on tour, shopping for the perfect gift, or searching for a last-minute deal to see your favorite NHL team, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing beats being there in person for the biggest plays of the year, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I got the SeatGeek app on my phone about a year and a half ago. I wanted to see a Broadway show. Boom, they hooked it up. I got to see what kind of seats were available, what fit my budget. I was able to purchase them. It fit my budget perfect. Didn't have to deal with any dirtbag scalpers taking my money, running around the corner, never seeing it again. Because SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching all those sites for you. They compare the prices and let you know what you have, what you can afford. I can instantly find seats easily, a couple of quick taps. And I used SeatGeek the other day. Again, my nephew hits me up every week, it seems like, for Bruins tickets. And I'm going to be using them for the Rolling Stones next year. They're coming to Foxborough. Bang. SeatGeek is going to hook me up, and they're going to hook you up too. So make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code HOCKEY today. That's promo code HOCKEY for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, right seat, right now, right from your phone.
Holy shit, did JR bring the thunder with that interview. And we need to talk to Devin Setoguchi and Tori Mitchell at some point, because I think for everyone at home who listened to that story, they need to hear the opinions of the man who thought JR was dead.
That's the craziest story I've ever heard.
I need to see the video.
Yeah.
That's the craziest thing. If we could ever get that video, we need to do a behind the scenes on that prank, like just completely dive into just trying to get the clips. I'm wondering if we could ever get it done. But in moving forward around the league, some current happenings, a former teammate of JR in San Jose, who actually him and Roenick had a little bit of a beef. I would say Roenick made some comments, but then, you know, clarified what he thought about Patrick Marleau, who just played his 1,600th NHL game with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Two franchises, 1,600 games. The guy's been doing it. He wears wheels older than my nasty Eastons. He's got those terrible Reeboks. By the way, people are sending us pictures all the time. Hey, he can have mine. I'm still rocking these things. So the fact that Marlowe's buzzing around the league 1,600 times in skates that guys are wearing at some junk men's league game on Tuesday night, that just shows this guy can do it with anything.
Hey, so to clarify, I don't know that story between him and Marleau. Can you elaborate? Some of the listeners might not know that story.
Yeah, you know what? I don't remember the exact quote, but the JR was a little hard on Marleau, I believe, during one of the San Jose
not being a winner.
Yeah. Something about those lines and one of the San Jose flameouts. And JR's an outspoken guy. I think that's what people love about him. And it's also, you know, I've brought up before, it's kind of hard. You have to toe the line of playing with a guy or being a former player, but also calling people out when they haven't gotten the job done. So I just remember that, but it was just kind of hopped into my mind when I, you know, brought up how they were teammates.
That's the worst part of doing media now, is I don't want to be critical of anyone, but you got to keep your credibility. I try to not go at guys at all. I just try to be honest about my opinions. And if anything, be on more of like the non-confrontational side. So I know some people might be like, just say what you fucking really think. But like, so, man, I sucked.
I'll be in prison.
If anything, it's helped me that I really sucked at hockey, because I can be like, hey, man, like, yeah, you didn't have a good year, but it was still double as good as mine, my best. RA, I got to get your thoughts on this Mikko Rantanen kid.
Dude, he's unbelievable. Let me just give you a couple of quick notes on Patrick Marleau first.
Ooh, okay.
If he completes this season and plays all 82 games, it'll be the 11th time he's played all 82 games in the season.
I never did it once.
He hasn't missed a game since April of 09, and he's only missed fucking 30 games since the start of his career in 1997. Think about that. He's only missed 30 fucking games in a 20-something-year career.
Lidstrom had something similar to that, in that how do you not just get like a puck off the foot, broken foot? Like, it's crazy to think that you got to be in this amazing shape and you got to be one of the faster players and you got to be more than anything lucky, though. And I think Patrick Marleau would admit that in escaping injury and missing time in the NHL for that long, there's a lot of luck that goes into it.
And speaking of that, Keith Yandel is also still going too. They had him on the TV the other night talking about how he's got wood. Is it?
Three times with your right hand for KY. Keep this thing going. Sometimes I don't like bringing it up. I've never brought it up to him.
Well, we just brought it up with the Marleau.
Exactly. Well, but Keith right now has the record for current players.
Oh, okay.
Marlowe's behind him. Yeah. But still.
Keith has the Iron Man streak. But just to finish up with Marleau, if he does complete the year, he'll basically be fifth on all time for NHL games played after Gordie Howe, Mark Messier, Jaromir Jagr, and Ron Francis. Pretty impressive company. And one other thing, too, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau have combined for by far the most regular season games played by the top two picks from the same draft year. You know what I'm saying?
Holy crap.
3,109 games they've combined. The next guys on the list, Mike Modano and Trevor Linden, played 2,881 combined games. So,
and they played together. That's amazing.
Yeah, quirky little trivia. What an
amazing career he's had, and congratulations to him. And boys, before we keep moving forward, I know you guys were unavailable yesterday, but I had a chance to talk to Nick Niedert, the kid who won his first ECHL game in over 1,000 days. This guy has been everywhere in the minor hockey, or not the minor, the minor leagues, I should say. He's played in leagues I've never even heard of. And it was interesting to hear his story and how he got the call up to the ECHL from his regular job on Black Friday. And we're going to send it off to him real quick for a surprise interview. So hope you guys enjoy.
Yo, guys, hang up for 1 second. I just want to talk to you guys about 23andMe for a second. Did a few other advertisements for them earlier. Well, I signed up for this thing. I sent my DNA in. I'm just waiting for the results. If you haven't heard of it, you want to check it out at 23andMe. They're going to have DNA kits on sale from now through December 25th. This stuff is incredible. 23andMe, it helps you understand what your DNA can tell you about you and your family history. I'm sure we all hear different, maybe ethnicities of what old ancestors of ours may or may not have been. Well, 23andMe can get through the confusion, tell you where your ancestors are from. 150 different regions around the world. They can pin it down to, you know, maybe a county in Ireland or a country in Africa or somewhere in India. It's incredible what this stuff does. They could tell you, you know, your muscle composition through your genetics. You know, do you have a certain composition that, you know, maybe would make you more athletic? You know, there's links between DNA and muscle composition that they could tell you about. Do you twitch when you're sleeping? All this crazy stuff that you wouldn't even think about. Personally, I cannot wait to find out the ethnicity part. I know a great chunk of my ancestors are from Ireland, but I'm dying to see if I have something from somewhere else. And that's what 23andMe does, man. They get your DNA. You just got to throw a little spit in a tube. You send it off to them, and then they get back to you. They give you a code. You can go online and read up on your history. Genealogy has always fascinated me. If it fascinates you, I can't recommend this enough. Again, so now through December 25th, you're going to get 30% off a 23andMe kit. So order your DNA kit at 23andMe.com/chicklets. That's the number 23andme.com/chicklets. Again, that's 23andme.com/chicklets for 30% off your DNA kit. Do it today.
Guys, before we move on here, I got a special guest I want to bring on. We talked about it last episode. This goalie playing in the jungle. The tropical rainforest, more like it. Not even the AHL, the fucking SP, the ECHL, the IHL, the AAHL. Where the fuck is that? He won his first ECHL game in over 1,000 days after he went to Reading and signed what I assume is a PTO. I want to welcome Nick Niedert to the podcast. Nick, what's going on, buddy?
How are you? Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So Reading, the Royals Twitter account was posting about you. Obviously a very cool story. It'd been a while since you'd won a game at the ECHL level. I looked at your hockey DB, dude. This thing is, I don't think Nicolas Cage could have figured this thing out. National fucking treasure. Holy shit, dude.
It's longer than the average one, I'd say. Yeah.
So you're from Iowa.
Correct. Yes.
Hudson, Iowa. You're now 36 years old, born in 82. You actually started playing pro the year before I did. And you started out for a while there in the SPHL. Man, what is the SPHL like?
Yeah, that was the first lockout year. So I started out, went to camp in Fort Wayne. They were in the U-Haul then. Obviously, they called it the U-Haul because it was the United Hockey League, but they had some trips. So obviously there was a lot of trickle down, you know, you know about Motor City, you know, Chelly was playing there, Hatcher, you know, Smolensky, they had a ton of show guys playing in Detroit. Jackman was playing down in St. Louis. Salvador was playing there. There were some great players in the league. Obviously, you know, the Danbury Trashers, everyone knows the history of them. That's been around the minors. They had a lot of NHL guys as well. So I went down to the Southern Pro, didn't really know what to expect on my way down there. Unbelievable towns, obviously, for the most part, a lot of old ECHL towns, but, the hockey it was tough. It was a lot of fun, but, yeah, it was definitely a lot tougher than it is now. That's for sure.
Well, your first year, you bounced around to four different teams. I mean, so was it the trickle-down effect because of the lockout why you couldn't stick with the team, you think?
No, no, absolutely not. I started out in Macon. great group of guys. This is, you know what, when I signed, my coach brought me in. He's like, all right, we're going to keep you for now. I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. And then I knew it was, you know, I was on borrowed time. And I stuck around till after Christmas, you know, got some experience there. I got to get my first start in the minors, you know, with the team. It's somewhere that, you know, I'm always going to be fond of in my career, obviously, with my very traveled career. But then, you know, coming out of junior into this, it was tough to do because, I came out, you know, you come out of the North American League and you're going into, you know, professional hockey where these are people's jobs. Like, this is their job. They're not a bunch of idiots. Like, this is their job. This is what they were doing. And I'm coming out of junior, you know, I'm young, you know, not really, you know, you hear about the lifestyle, but, you know, basically I was just a fucking idiot for the most part, to be honest with you.
What do you mean?
Like, that's why I bounced around. No, it's just, you know, if I didn't feel like doing something, I'd be like, oh, fuck that. I'm not doing that. I'm not, you know, I don't need to be doing something. Like, little stupid shit. Like, you know, practice.
What were you getting paid, though?
That's another good point. Not very much, to the point where I probably could have said, ah, fuck this. I don't need to do this.
Okay, well, like, give me a number. Give me a number. Like, people want to know. I mean, that was the year.
Oh, my rookie year? Oh, my rookie year, I was making $200 a week. That was before taxes. Like, that was before taxes.
So they give you a place to live. Do they give you, like, gas money and shit? Like, how do you survive on
$200 a week before taxes? Well, you know what? I left home young. You know, you learn to budget money. So I basically learned to live like that for years, you know, and instead of going to, you know, get a nice meal out, you're finding a way to cook something at home. And, you know, there's little things like that, but, no, there's a lot of places in town, obviously, all these towns in the minors, there's a lot of places that take care of you. You know, you get 50% off at some restaurants or whatnot. Obviously, you know how to budget your money, but yeah, money was pretty scarce at that time.
So then you
so it was a lot of week to week. It was a lot of week to week.
So in that first, I guess you could say 5 years pro, which a majority of it you spent in the SPHL, and then you were in the EPHL. I don't even know what that is. And then the AAHL, I think they're just making up these leagues. What was, like, the craziest story? Like, what is some of the craziest shit you saw? Because obviously it's, like, not as professional as, I mean, even the ECHL where I played, and fuck, even then there were some crazy stories.
That's true. You know what? There was one team I was a starting goalie my second year, and I'm like, oh, shit, that was my fourth year. All these years just flow together. It's been 15. What do you expect? I think it was my fourth year. I was playing in the league. We didn't get paid for like a good amount of time. And I was just like, holy Christ, and this is ridiculous. But like some of the things that we had to do, it was just, we were on a good streak. This is when I was playing in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and we were just holding on for dear life, basically. And obviously the league folded, but there were a lot of things that come into it. Like, you'd be surprised some of the people that you meet along the way. I've met numerous great people, but I've met some absolute just degenerates.
Do you get a little uncomfortable, like talking about it as far as maybe bringing some of those up? Cause I noticed some guys get a little bit filtered cause they don't want to throw anyone out of the bus. But is there any like particular story where you're like, this was absolutely like ridiculous and you're kind of on the cusp of saying it?
Oh no, I don't care. My first year, we were talking about, you know, getting bounced around and whatever. Okay. Remember like a few weeks ago, you were talking about a guy with a ton of penalty minutes. I played with this guy that in junior, he had 653 penalty minutes.
On what team?
I was in, this is my first year, second team. This was Asheville, North Carolina, Asheville Aces. Yeah.
What was his name?
Marc-Andre Waugh. He was a French-Canadian guy, real tough customer. Obviously, if you have 600-plus PIMs, you don't fuck around. So,
oh, my God. He played for Baie-Comeau Drakkar in the Q like the junior league. 653 yeah. penalty minutes. Oh, my God. That's
yeah. I remember seeing – first off, we're at the hotel. We go across the street to this Applebee's, and my coach, Jeff Brubaker at the time, we're walking over. He's like, hey, we're going to meet this new guy. All right, whatever. And no big deal. This guy had the Rick Vaughn leather jacket on, like with the sleeves cut off. We meet him at this Applebee's. He doesn't say a word. He's got a mohawk, like gauge earrings before they were cool. Like in that very short span where people
had. Whoa, before? Were they ever cool? What are gauge earrings?
No, not really. No.
Grinnell,
the ones with the big holes.
Oh, like hoop?
Yeah, they got big holes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You mean like punk rockers have?
Yeah. They make an actual hole in your earlobe.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah. So, go to this Applebee's. Here's this guy. He's got the leather jacket, like no sleeves on it. I'm looking like down the table. I'm like, holy fuck. You know, I'm young kid, my rookie year. I'm not going to say anything other than I'm going to be extremely nice to this guy. So whatever. So we get on the ice the next day in warm up, and he is just patrolling the red line. I don't think he took a shot on goal. I don't really know.
Before the game, he just stretching at center, just eyeing guys down, licking his lips.
Oh, excited as shit. Just ready to go. I'm sitting, by the way, we didn't wear visors till like my fourth year, I think it was, maybe fourth or fifth year in the minors. So it was just buckets. No buckets in warmups, obviously. So he is just patrolling. And I'm like, holy Christ, look at this guy. I go in the locker room, and you know how you get the pregame pamphlet? I'm looking through it, and I see 600-plus penalty minutes. Like, holy Christ, I cannot wait to see what this guy does. Goes out. First shift, he buries this guy into the second row of seats. Like, he put him through the glass. Like, it was unbelievable. Crushes this guy. Goes into this. I'm sitting there like, thank Christ we have something now. Because we weren't very good, you know, on the stats and whatnot. We weren't very high in the standings. We were out of playoffs by quite a bit. And this was, I think it was somewhere in February. So it's like, all right, you still have time to, you know, make up some ground. Like, oh, I cannot. This guy's unbelievable. This, that, and the other. He 3-and-outed that night. And there was a guy, his name was Craig Stahl, played for Columbus. He was there for years, played in the Coast, Central League there, Southern League, you know, to end his career there. Great, great guy, native guy, tough as nuts. And Craig put his hands on him, to say the least. Like, he put his hands on him. And it didn't go well for our guy. But he 3-and-outed. He did his job. He was incredible. But the biggest thing was the sleeveless leather jacket.
Well,
unbelievable.
I mean, just looking at his Hockey DB, so he was there for 6 games he played, and he had 117 play minutes. So he made quick
work all
of his time there.
Earned all of them.
Like any crazy shit off the ice, like buses breaking down or like guys getting arrested or anything crazy off the ice?
Oh, you know what? The funny thing is, no, that's a long story. No, I never got arrested. But the funny part is the bus breaking down or starting on fire. Yes, and that is something that you and I have ties to. It happened in Wheeling.
No, time out. Did you still have the sleeper bus when you were there?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That thing used to break down every other road trip. We used to have to swap out with the booster bus and take the regular coach bus, and then they would have to wait till ours got fixed. So that's right. You played with the Nailers. I played there, and you know, it's quite the town. It's interesting.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I have a couple of funny things about buses with Wheeling. First off, when I played for Wheeling, we were playing on Chicago on, I think, a Wednesday night, so we left Tuesday. And we were just getting on the interstate, you know, where you drive down outside of West Banco, the rink. But you're on the interstate, and the rink is to your right, and the casino island's on the left.
Oh, yeah.
Like right there.
Right near.
All of a sudden, the smoke.
What was the strip club called right there?
Oh,
Don't pretend like you don't know the fucking name of that strip club.
I don't know the name. I swear to you, I don't know the name.
We're gonna have a bunch of people tweeting it at us because after I left, there was a group of guys who used to go. Apparently, there was this rich kid who played for the team after that, where his old man was worth a boatload, but he just wanted to play pro, and he was pretty sick apparently. And they used to just go fucking chuck ones every night and get shit faced and had a blast. I'm gonna get the name here. I'm gonna dig it up while you're
talking. That pisses me off. He wasn't on my team. He was not on the team. I was on there. I would have known about that. No, he wasn't on the team.
You guys were throwing dollars, but you had it attached to the fish line and you'd reel it back in.
The fish line, exactly.
You had to do it on a budget.
Exactly.
Right?
Absolutely. So we pull around there and all of a sudden the smoke comes rolling in. And I was in the back of the bus, not in like the Marriott part where the door closes and you have like the suite part of the bus.
Right.
I was the last bunk in the middle part. So the door opens and I'm like, yeah, like, do you smell that? And I look back, holy shit. So I scream to the front of the bus. I'm like, pull the bus over, there's smoke. And then all I hear is like all the grumbling, like what? I go, pull the fucking bus over. We're on fucking fire. We all of us grab our shit. We run out of the bus. We're all in our road tuxedos still. Like no one's geared down and jumped into their bunk yet. So we're all standing on the side of the interstate. Billy Higgins, one of the best equipment guys ever.
I talked about him last episode.
He gets out with the driver. They have one of those like kitchen fire extinguishers, you know, the little ones that are like the size of a bottle of water. Sprays down. We had a little bit of an electrical issue. They put the fire out. Billy gets a roll of Renfrew black hockey tape, tapes up the wires. Driver's like, all right, we're good to go. We're driving from Wheeling, West Virginia to Chicago.
Did you guys make it?
If you were good. Oh, absolutely. If you were good in fifth grade social studies, you know that those two like towns are not close together. So, yep, there we go. Go over. All the boys, we get in our bunks. We still have our road tuxes on. We still have our shoes on. All the guys have their belongings on their chest for like the first 2 hours. Like, all right, we're just waiting to catch on fire here. Then we're just going to get off again. So, yeah, it was pretty remarkable. So, second bus story. I'm playing for Reading. Our transmission blows in the wheel. Our transmission blows. We weren't staying at the McClure. We were staying at some resort not too far outside of town. Can't think of the name of it. Really nice place, actually. Really nice place. Because the manager of the hotel, he's like, don't worry. I have a bus for you. You guys are fine. So, but this was Saturday morning pregame skate. Our transmission goes. So Coach Larry Corville's like, all right, you guys, we're going to take a bunch of cabs back, grab all your shit off the bus. So all the boys are grabbing their blankets and all their stuff. We jump into a bunch of cabs, drive to this resort. This guy's like, don't worry. You're good. I have a bus. It wasn't even a party bus. It was one of those party trolleys that you see like at the holidays. So here we come barreling into the rink in a trolley that I think top speed was like 35 miles an hour.
Like a duck boat.
Yeah, pretty much. We get off the bus, going into the rink. We all have our belongings and everything. Billy was at the doorway, you know, like, where the fuck have you guys been? And he's just looking at us, just shaking his head. Like, you know, Billy's seen everything.
Oh, he's seen it all, man. He's been there for
probably. Yeah, he's seen everything.
But he used to play like Guitar Hero and shit in between periods. Like he would have his full gear on because he would have to back up if like a goalie got called up like last minute and he had to dress. But he loves Wheeling.
Oh, he's the best there. He is the best. He's a staple there. He's been there for years. My first game I ever played in the ECHL, my equipment guy was the backup for Elmira, and Billy was backing up Patty Killeen. No shit. You had two backup goalies. They were both the equipment guys. Same whistle, media timeout. Both goalies get off the bench. Go, you know how like the doors are in the same end?
Yeah.
Both goalies go to the doors with one skate. With one fucking skate. Both of them buzz a pair of skates. Come back to the doors, next whistle, both goalies come back on with one skate in their hands.
So
it was absolutely hysterical.
Because they had to go
sharpen the skate, yeah.
Yeah, I was telling them.
They had to do their job.
Oh, my God. Hey, and you know what? They only used to give him 50 extra bucks when he would have to back up.
You know what? Billy's the type of guy to be like, yeah, I'm not doing equipment manager then. I'm just going to play goal. Or
I will say this. He gets a little grumpy sometimes, but he was always good to me because I treated him great. I used to like give him my old skates and like he could do whatever he wanted because he, like I said, he was awesome to me. The one time we kind of got into a little bit was when I was an ECHL All-Star, not a big deal, back-to-back years. I'm sure you've heard. I'm sure my jersey's up in the rafters in the wheelhouse. So
I think they took it down just to clean it.
Okay, there you
just
go.
Just a quick clean.
So at the time, the RBK 7Ks were like the best sticks, and that's what I was using when I was an NHL training.
Were those the ones with the holes in it?
No, the one before that. So they were the white and blue ones. So
yes. Okay, I know what you're saying.
So the because now I was down on the coast, they were responsible for buying my sticks. They didn't have to pay my salary because Pittsburgh was in control of that. And
yeah, so, you just go against the cap like $500 or something.
So exactly. So they gave me the 6Ks, and I'm like, yo, like, no. Like, I'm fucking, I was an all-star last year. I'm a fucking playmaker down here. Get me the fucking 7Ks. And Billy's like, like the owners are, you know, they say, and I was like, bud. So then about 4 or 5 days later, sticks came in, and they were the 7Ks, but they were the fucking 6Ks with a 7K sticker over it. And I go, Billy, come on here. Like, come on. So he goes, Biz, you got to talk to the owner. So I go down to the office down on the main street there, and I go in.
Yeah, by the little pizza spot.
Yeah, I go, boys, I said, this is fucking unacceptable. I said, get me some fucking RBK 7Ks, and then I said, I'm not fucking playing power play anymore. Imagine me threatening a team not to play power play. Could you ever imagine? But, and sure enough, they said, all right,
we're going to get some real millennial shit.
Right. They go. But it was, hey man, I couldn't even shoot with these things. I might as well have gotten gas station sticks. So I finally, they're like, all right, we'll get you 6. And then by the time that I'd gone through the 6, I finally gotten called back up. But that was the only time me and Billy added up button heads. But other than that, man, great. He was an unbelievable guy. And he's a legend in Wheeling. Let's talk about your first win in over 1,000 days, getting called back
up.
So
what happened?
They had an injury and then you just get called back up?
Yeah. You know what? They called me on Friday and, just asked, hey, can you dress tonight? It was Friday afternoon. I'm working at my job at the hockey store in Connecticut. I'm like, it's Black Friday. There's not a goddamn chance I'm going to make it there just because of all the traffic and everything. And I have to drive over, just outside New York City. It's going to be a nightmare. I'm like, it's not possible. I said, no worries. I will be there tomorrow. So, talk to the coach after. I'm looking at the box scores the night goes on Friday. I said, holy shit, there's a chance I'm going to have to play tomorrow just because, it didn't go well for the guy. He was getting, they were losing a little bit and then they were losing more after the second. And, naturally they lost Friday night. It didn't go very well for him. So I get a text from the assistant coach after the game. He's like, yep, you're still good to come tomorrow, but, gonna sign you, which means basically they can use me if they need me. You know what I mean? Like when you're on an emergency, you cannot go in unless there's an injury. So when you sign, it's like, okay, you actually have a much better chance of playing, I guess you would say. Well, then the alternative. So driving up Saturday afternoon, assistant coach calls. He's like, hey, how do you feel? I'm like, I'm fine. He's like, where are you? I said, I'm on the Taconic. I'll be there in about an hour and a half, 2 hours. He's like, all right, good. How do you feel? I'm like, why do you keep asking me? He's like, well, cause you're going tonight. I'm like, where the fuck am I going? Oh shit. I got to play tonight. He's like, yep. You're going. And I was like, all right. He goes, how do you feel? I'm like, does it really matter right now? You don't have a lot of choice.
So he asked you, how do you feel about 60 times is what you're saying.
Yeah, he was a little nervous. Mike was a little nervous. Imagine being a GM or a coach or an assistant coach. Like, all right, I have 3 goalies on my roster. One's banged up at the moment. The other one's banged up at the moment. And the other one is in the American League. You're my 4th guy on the depth chart today. Like, you're going to be nervous as shit playing him after losing at home 8-3. Like, that's just the way it is. So, let's go. We've done it before. Like, let's do it again, I guess. Why not? So, drive up, meet the coaching staff, the equipment staff, training staff. They were there, ready to go. You know what? I had a couple minutes just to kind of on the drive, just to kind of relax. You know, I made a couple of calls, you know, my family, and told them I was playing. And like, oh, you know, I think I have 60 minutes left in the tank. So just going to let it all out and see what happens. All the guys, when I got to the rink, you know, they were coming in shortly after. They were staying. Did you ever play in Adirondack on the road or anything?
Yeah. It's a dump.
Yeah. You stayed though at that hotel, like a couple blocks away.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's haunted.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. So, you know, those guys were walking in any minute. All the guys were, you know, hey, how's it going? Good to see you again. Supportive and whatnot. So it was good though. Yeah. Everybody, he wasn't nervous, but he wasn't exactly excited. Let's put it that way. The staff, but you know, it ended up working out at the end.
Do you want to fucking talk about the game at all? Like, fuck, sure, you just talked for 10 minutes about your drive in.
Oh, fuck. Here we go. All right. So yeah, got on the ice for warm up. Everything felt good. You know, I wasn't as nervous as I normally am for games.
Well, yeah, just because you lose, who cares? You're fucking working at a department store a day ago.
Hockey store, yeah. Fuck, I'm not.
What are they going to do, blame you? You ended up winning and they cut you anyway.
Good point. Sweet spit and chicklets bump, by the way. I fucking waved after you guys talked about me. Jesus Christ.
What do you mean? You got the opposite. Like, you got
I got brought on the show, even better.
You got chicklets bumped off the roster.
But I got bumped on the show, though, so that's huge.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Hey, you put $50 on the board. Did you end up paying that?
I'm fucking trying to get a hold of somebody's Venmo. Nobody ever was like, you know what? Don't worry about it. You got it.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that.
Rookie party's coming up. I'm paying.
No. You don't have to pay that. You got snipped. You say, screw you, boys. You fucking could have kept me up for another day's pay and got it.
So go out. Everything's good. Go into the first period. You know what? The fucked up thing though is the guys didn't treat me any differently than I've ever been treated when I've played on a team. It was just, the transition was seamless. Like, I walked in, the guys made me feel like I've been there since day one of training camp. There was no issue. You know, I had a guy go elbow in on me in warmups and he's skating by, fucking any league, bud. So it was just like, you know, just the little chirps and everything, and just it's hard to put into words. Just when you're on a club, you know, you're on a club, you know, you've been there, you've gone up and down, and then there's just a break-in period. There was no break-in period. The guys were great. They were chirping with each other. I was getting involved. It was no big deal. So that actually really helped. So game goes on, they score a goal after the first media timeout. They scored a goal. A guy from the point fired one just through a set of bodies, and he buried, obviously. And then we score on a power play. We go into the first intermission 1-0 or 1-1, sorry. And everything's good. You know, attitudes are good. We get into some penalty trouble in the second, and Adirondack's a very good team. They have they're very well coached. Very well prepared. They are just snapping it around. Absolutely snapping it around in the second. Mind you, I've not played a pro hockey game in a year and a week. And that was in the Federal League. So it's not even close to the speed of this. A year and a week. And I threw up twice in the second period in my mouth and had to swallow it or spit it into the net.
Oh.
That's how out of shape I was. Oh, it was terrible. Like, these guys were fucking snapping the puck around. I could barely keep my shit together. So I'm just trying to keep up with everything, kind of hanging on by the seat of my pants. Going, after killing the penalties, we go in to the locker room. It's 1-1 going into 3. And I'm sitting there, you know, doing my thing in between periods, taping my stick. And coach comes in with about 10 minutes left on the clock, gets the boys going. He's fired up. I mean, in hindsight, when you think of it, you have a goalie that's playing right now that has no business playing in the UCHL. And you guys are 1-1 going into the third, like against a very good hockey club. You know, all you had to do was fool them for 20 more minutes. That's basically what I was saying in my head. When we were walking on the ice, I just said to myself, I'm like, I just got to fool people for an hour. That's all I got to do.
What were the shots
on the ice? But
what were the shots in the third?
Third, let's see. They had 15 in the third. I know they had 15 in the third. Second period, I think they probably had.
Oh, you know, we don't got to go back. Fuck.
No, I think they had, no, they had double digits. They had double digits in the second. But I mean, the guys were like, the D zone was unbelievable. The PK was phenomenal. They had a bunch of seam passes. Guys were getting sticks on them. So, I mean, when guys are getting sticks on pucks and whatnot, it's keeping you out of harm's way, basically. And the guys basically kept me out of harm's way for all those.
Boys rallied, got the job done for you. You had 38 saves, and it was that the most emotional victory of your entire life?
Yes. Yes, because you saw how hard these guys were working. Like, these guys were
not very hard. They gave up 38 shots, didn't they?
Yeah, but I was thinking about it. I probably had three or four saves where they were good saves. Like, they weren't routine. Like, I probably had three or four pretty good saves. I got lucky a couple times. A guy snipped me pretty good, but it got a piece of the bar and it went out. Thank Christ. But, yeah, short side too. That's never good. But the D were unbelievable. Wow. Unbelievable. I swear to you, I think they blocked maybe 35, 40 shots. The players did. Forwards just laying down, just wearing them. I'm like, you guys are fucking nuts. You guys have a quarter of the padding on.
Yeah, you're making $200 bucks.
That's what they wanted to do.
Bodies on the line.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then obviously after the game, the boys were probably super pumped for you. And then what? You went back to Reading and then one or two days later you got snipped?
Drove my car right back to Connecticut right after the game.
And that was it. That's all she wrote.
That was it. But you know what? The cool thing about the whole thing, all of it, the best part about this, I grew up in Iowa, obviously. I watched Scotty Clemenson, who is now working with the Devils. Adirondack is a Devils team. I looked up to that guy my whole life, basically. He's, I think he's a 77, so he's 5 years older than me. When I was first starting to say, you know what, I want to do this pro hockey thing, he was doing the Boston College, and then obviously he went on to the Devils. But he's working for the Devils. He came down after the game, and we talked for about 15 minutes. And he was a guy from Iowa that I looked up to. I was so happy that I played well, obviously. We got a win. But I was the best part about the whole thing was Scott came down and talked to me after the game. And that was a guy that I looked up to, you know, as a kid. And he came down to tell me I did a hell of a job. It was just, that was hands down the best part of the whole thing.
Icing on the cake.
Yeah, 100%. A guy that I looked up to my whole career came down to say, hey, great job. And I was like, holy shit. That was 100% the best moment.
Awesome, buddy. That's a pretty cool story. Obviously, from the Spittin' Chicklets crew, we congratulate you, and thanks for coming on and giving us your time to talk about that cool moment.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. And you know what? You guys do a hell of a job. All the guys in the minors are listening to you. I know that much. And by the way, with Whitney, he always talks about playing for the national development team. I fucking could not stand playing against them.
Is that a little bit of a humble brag?
No, all the kids, they have their full cages. I was 20 years old my last year, junior, and all these kids are 16, 17 years old. They're all on full boats.
Ah, okay.
They're all, you know, they're going to college. They know they're getting drafted.
For those
just
wondering,
full running around.
For those wondering who are listening, full boats means they have full rides already in place. Scholarships.
Yes. They're all on full boats. They're all with cages, running around, doing their thing, playing for the development team, getting whatever they wanted. I fucking could not stand playing. But you know what? A couple of guys actually were pretty good. A couple of the guys could chirp pretty good, though. A couple of the guys could chirp pretty well. I would have absolutely, just from listening to Whitney on here, I would have hated playing against him. He would have just been one of those ruthless people. Ruthless.
I mean, hey, man, he had the skills to back it up back then.
Exactly. And all those kids, they were so talented. They could basically just tell us we were fucking losers and they were going to play in the show and we were nothing. And We just had to sit there and say, oh, yeah, you got
to. They're like, you'll be making 200 a week in the SP. But thanks for coming on. We appreciate 100%. Your time.
Thank you so much. Good luck with everything. Continue what you're doing. You guys are doing a fucking hell of a job.
Well, there you have it, guys. I know you guys couldn't join me, but I thought it was a very interesting story. I always love hearing stories about the tropical rainforest, as I like to call it, as opposed to the AHL jungle. You know, obviously he was excited, and hockey's a wonderful game, man. It's awesome. But what else we got to talk about here, boys? All right, I know that you're a huge fan of this Finnish kid, the Mikko Rantanen over in Colorado. He's continuing to light the lamp.
He is. He's the first player in the NHL this year to get to 40 points. He had 2 assists versus Nashville Tuesday night. He did it in 24 games. The only Avalanche or Nordique player who has been the first in the NHL to 40 points in the season. Only one other guy has done it in the franchise. A fellow by the name of Peter Forsberg. They're back in 97-98. This Rantanen, man, he's unbelievable. I don't think he arrived at the NHL with a lot of fanfare like some other foreign players did, but he's been outstanding, one of the top players in the league. You got to think he's probably going to get some hot trophy nominations, probably, or votes, I should say.
I was doing a little digging, too. Only 7 right-wingers in the history of the NHL have won the Art Ross Trophy. Gordie Howe, Boom Boom Geoffrion, Guy Lafleur, Boom Boom, Jaromir Jagr, Guy Lafleur, who I just mentioned, Martin St. Louis, Patrick Kane, and Jerome Iginla. I mean, obviously there's a long way to go here. But he's probably at the top of the list right now, and he's got another fucking guy on his line who's probably in the running as well. And what's even crazier is currently the NHL has 4 right wingers in the top 10 in scoring right now. So Marner, Kucherov, and Pasternak are the other 3. And man, it's the days of the playmaking right wingers.
Yes, and those names. I mean, are you kidding me? I do think Rantanen, I keep saying it, he has moments when it's Malkin-ish, where he's buzzing up the ice. He's so big, but he's flying by people. Doesn't even necessarily look like he's going that fast, and then can use the body to protect the puck. So Colorado's got something cooking in that organization. Hey,
and so I mentioned, I think a few weeks ago, I played against him in the minors, and how it's crazy how much he scaled up, because he was dominant in the AHL, but never like, whoa, like, why the fuck is this guy in the minors?
Yeah.
And then he got up to the NHL. And then last year, a lot of people were saying, like, you play with McDavid. Of course, he's going to put up those numbers. He's his own fucking player. And yep. They came in the other night, and they had a really good game against the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, hey, off night for the Yotes. Fucking off night.
It's been a couple lately.
No, hey, big comeback last night in Minnesota. Man, not a big deal. But he's got a bit of a mean streak to his game, too. He throws some cross checks. Yeah, he hangs finished. In there. Yeah, he's a gamer, and it was a pleasure watching him the other night, and I've gained a shit ton of respect for him and just how he's rounded out as an overall player, and that 1-2 punch is nasty, and then they got Landeskog as the other guy, so I think they're over 100 points combined already right now, which is by far and above the best in the league.
Guys, before I go any further, I just want to talk to you for a moment about Mugsy Jeans. Man, they sent me a pair a few months back. I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. The most comfortable jeans I've ever worn. I've never worn jeans before. I thought I can go to the gym and work out, but I do it Mugsy Jeans. Especially if you're a hockey guy or an athlete, you probably struggle to find clothes that fit you well. You know, let's face it, a lot of men's clothes don't fit. They're not designed for guys with big thighs or a big ass, you know, especially when it comes to jeans. I used to hate getting old jeans with the boot fit and all that. No way, man. The Mugsy jeans, they're like wearing yoga pants. I mean that in the best complimentary way. They're so comfortable, you don't even know you have them on. The Mugsy jeans are designed specifically for the athletic group, so you definitely want to try them out. They got high-tech materials like synthetic silk, a bunch of other technical stuff you don't want to get bored with, but you definitely want to try it out. It's so flexible. I can't stress that enough. They're like stretch jeans. Usually when you get home from work, the first thing you want to do is take the jeans off, put the pajamas on. But Mugsy's, man, you could sleep in them. They're that comfortable. Men's Health called them the best jeans for athletes. I'm not much of an athlete, but they're great for guys like myself, too. If you want to try it out, definitely give it a whirl right now, because Mugsy is extending their Cyber Monday deals to Stoolie listeners through the end of this week. Do your legs a favor. Check out the jeans that are sweeping Stoolie Nation by heading to MugsyJeans.com. Use the code SPIT20 to get 20% off your order. That's free shipping, free returns, and 20% off the most comfortable men's jeans ever made by heading to MugsyJeans.com. Use the code SPIT20. The offer expires this week, so don't miss out. Get on it today.
And moving along to a little other subject in terms of Chicklets possibly taking Chippewa, Mikey Grinnell, who's become, I guess, like Sabres fans' favorite member of this podcast for the riding them from the beginning. They're at 10 in a row, and you tried telling us you have some sort of deal for us. What is this you have cooking up there?
No, it's not much of a deal for you guys. It's just I have a proposal, per se. So if the Buffalo Sabres make the Stanley Cup Finals all the way to the finals, they don't have to win, but if they make it there, I will get a Buffalo Sabres tattoo on my ass.
What?
Not even for just making the playoffs?
No, if they make it to the Stanley Cup Finals.
That's a fair bet.
I will get a Buffalo Sabres tattoo on my ass, and maybe we'll let the fans choose a little text that goes below it.
But there's also like the matter of fact that you have a Plymouth State tattoo on your ass, so obviously it doesn't.
Well, he's going to cover that.
Oh, no, no. Wait, time out. You have two cheeks. They're both a blank canvas. One is empty right now. One is not. So I have a blank canvas that I am offering up to Buffalo Sabres fans, and I'm saying if they make it to the finals, I will get a Buffalo Sabres tattoo on my ass.
That's a fair bet. I think it's Whit, you said just the playoffs. Like, I think they're going to make playoffs. I think, like, at worst, they're going to get a wild card spot.
Buddy.
Boys, let's just talk about that sports town in general one more time briefly here. There was that kid online who posted the video after the game. He said that he would let Skinner fuck his wife if he re-signed with the team. Talk about fan dedication. Some kid on fucking Twitter. He posted a video. He's like, you know, obviously he was pumping the team's tire, and he's like, Skinner, if you re-sign there, I'll let you fuck my wife. Like,
I bet he's not even kidding either. I bet he
would
let Skinner fuck his wife.
Best fan base in sports when they're winning, man. I'm telling
you.
They're
taking pictures and ask Skinner to sign it after.
The whole team's Bukkake and his wife, and he's just like kissing the cup and taking pictures. And like, it's they're nuts, man.
Skinner's like, hey, here, let me at least give your wife some money. I just signed $45 million. He's like, no, dude, we're good. We're good. Just sign my pic of you hitting her.
Yeah, I saw my cell phone case.
I was on the fence, but now that you mentioned it, yeah, I'll stuff your wife and then stay in Buffalo. That's a fucking strange offer.
At the signing bonus, like, or at the conference when they're introducing it.
So, Grinnelli, like, so what's the other side of the bet? If they don't get to the cup, what do you get?
I don't know.
I think you just want another tattoo in your ass, personally.
No, I don't, because I'm not a tattoo guy. I'm not a tattoo guy at all, and I only got that one tattoo when I was really drunk in college. So, like, that's kind of like a wash. So this is it's like starting from scratch here.
He's also thinking ahead of us, their first round series for a live show, and being like, hey, you know, maybe he's a little cold streak. Maybe he's not. He's living in New York City. I would hope not. And maybe he's like, hey, listen, do you know that if the Sabres make it to the cup, I'm going to get a tattoo on my hoop? And then all of a sudden he's just wheeling something. So hey, I know how your brain works, you little weasel.
And that's a city you can actually get laid in, because they're, you know.
Gritty.
I feel like I wouldn't appeal to the women in Buffalo. I'm a small, scrawny kind of guy. I feel like they like.
Oh, yeah? You couldn't even break a table. You couldn't even break a table.
No way.
I actually got a funny story. So I got laid at rookie party there. And,
shocker.
But the next day I went to the rink, and you know, I the boys were obviously like, hey, did you go home with that one? I'm like, no, I didn't go home with her, but she like came over after, and like everyone kind of had a giggle. Well, apparently one of the other guys took her home first, and then afterwards she came over to my place. So I'm like, oh God, really? So obviously the morale in the locker room was pretty high. We ended up winning. You're welcome. And I ended up getting sloppy seconds. So.
Can't marry her now, huh, Biz?
Yeah, I know. I was like, fuck.
Hey, I don't know if you guys noticed or saw my hit of the week around the NHL lately was, did you see the collision between Dustin Byfuglien and Jamie Oleksii?
Oh, awful. Yeah,
oh, my awful. God. That is, I mean, what is that? I'm going to say at least 500 pounds colliding. And you saw Byfuglien, he had the Bambi legs going, but he came back. I'm pretty sure he came back to the game. So just to see a collision like that, I mean, you don't see hits like that at all anymore, let alone the two biggest guys in the league.
And you know that guy's hurting if Buff's going down.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, he went down too, I think.
Boys, one thing we kind of skimmed over was Ristolainen and Selle after the OT winner. Oh my God. That's to me, that's the best current celebration. What a celebration. What was he doing that dance? It's called.
What is, and someone tweeted at him, welcome to the crew or something. Grinnelli, are you up with that pop culture?
The Millie Rock.
What is the Millie Rock?
Millie Rock, you know, a little Millie Rock.
I don't even know who Millie Rock is. Is that bad?
Oh, it's a dance move. I don't think it's anyone.
So
who
we got
made it up.
I don't know. These rappers come out with these new dances.
That was Tre'Davious White. That was the safety for the Bills. Bills who came out who fronted as the Sabres goalie in that video.
All right. Now
he was
now,
like, I got you. We need Millie Rock in.
And boys. We got to shout him out for the Budweiser Canada Selly season. I mean, that to me, that's the best one so far this year. So we've been getting a lot of messages about it. So congratulations to Buffalo on 10 in a row. And Grinnell, you're going to finish this one off?
Yeah, timeout. So can we make this a full bet? So if they make the Stanley Cup, I will get a tattoo on my ass. If they don't make the playoffs at all, you guys have to do something for me.
Pretty vague.
I mean, what the hell am I getting out of that?
I get to get tattooed the Buffalo Sabres logo.
Yeah, but do you know how much more likely it is that they get into the playoffs as opposed to actually get into the finals?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's one or the other.
So I'd have to do something for you?
Let me sleep on this one. Let's take it up on Monday's episode. I got some thinking to do.
Okay. Hey, Miz, how funny was it that kid was like, dude, I ordered my Eagle Energy 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you guys want to talk about that?
How'd you get his name?
Okay, so let's talk about this. So every time somebody
lying piece of shit.
So I'm associated to Eagle Energy and my buddy runs it. And of course, you know, I'm promoting it. So anytime there's anything negative that comes online about it, like someone not getting their shipment on time or maybe one of their pens didn't work, I screenshot it and I send it right to them and they're on it. Like their customer service is unbelievable. So this kid says, I ordered it 2 weeks ago. I haven't got it. So I screenshot it, sent it to him and it has the name. So the guy writes me back. He goes, dude, he goes, that guy ordered it on Friday. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I said, screenshot it and send it to me. So he did. And then I said, and I wrote him back. I said, that's weird because this order says you ordered Friday. Hopefully you get it soon. And if not, message me again. Please be honest about when you order next time though. And I didn't think it was going to catch fire like it did because I replied to him. I didn't put it on my main page and oh man, it's already up to like 1800 likes. And I just fuck, dude. Don't waste people's time, because that guy had to. That guy was working, and then fuck, you wasted my time too, you asshole. So
did
I appreciate
the kid ever
your
say anything.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm getting lit up online, and I love it. And it's just like, all right, man. Well, if you want to be a scumbag and love it, then be a scumbag. So shout out to fucking Eagle Energy for getting on the customer service train. And if you do have problems, message me. We'll get it handled. They're good people. They're working hard. I don't want them to have to deal with that bullshit.
Hey, what about the Jeopardy boy? One of our listeners tweeted the picture. They said it looked like the nerd child of Whitney and Grinnelli. And you look at it, and it looks exactly like you two had a fucking kid.
It does look like you guys had a baby.
I'll tell you what. I bet that kid.
I would never.
I bet he passed some tape to tape, and he wheels at the bar. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, and it pays for everything. So what part of it? What part of you is in him?
I don't see any of it. That's the point. I was going to say it looks more like you. I don't see me in it, but
yeah, maybe. It's definitely a little brilliant. Anyways, I forget the listener who sniped it, but it was a fucking fantastic call. Whoever made it,
boys. Quickly, I think we should talk about that Matt Duchene goal, which ended up being the winner for Ottawa against Philly.
Also gave the over 6.5 in that same game.
Well, that's talked about.
All right, let's go to the gambling corner, RA. You take it off, buddy.
Wow, RA.
Well, Duchene's goal, yeah, that was incredible, knocking out of the air. Dude, I put the five picks, and I thought it was four, but Witz reminded me that I said to bet Vegas on the puck line, and he said, no, you went 5-0, and he texted me before the night started. He goes, I loaded up on all your picks, and I was like, oh, fuck no. I'm like, now I'm going to go 4-0, 0-4. I'm going to 0-5. I'm not going to hear the end of it from Witz and everybody else out there, and then I was watching all the games at once, like one come in, then two, then three. It was all up in the air. I had people out there. First off, do not fucking congratulate Betts in the first period or the second period or the fucking third.
Well, I was willing to congratulate that Vegas win at the end of the second period. I waited till then to text you.
But I had people saying great picks. I mean, it's fucking a one goal lead in the second period, man. You're not even close to a win yet. But
so I had you know, I'd put in all your picks, and it was such a win-win for me because I'm like, this is great. I'm going to make an absolute shitload of money tonight, or I can just torture him because these picks were so awful. I mean, this is perfect no matter what happens. The only thing I did, I actually money in puck line Vegas and Carolina. Carolina missed an empty net at the very end. Guy on the backhand put it wide. But other than that, I mean, that's a 5-1 night for the Wit Dog because of you, RA. And just looking, that was Sunday night, too. You were picking out these Tuesday games. So shout out to you just padding the wallet. Thank you.
How many people were messaging you, RA, about and thanking you?
A lot, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would venture to say that I made dozens of people thousands of dollars collectively last night. I mean, I was getting like DM slides, Twitter messages, all kinds of people jumped on the bandwagon. So they're going to be really fucking disappointed.
The same guy who offered his wife up to Skinner offered his wife up to you. Skinner? I just think it's crazy that you and Witt are essentially betting the same amount of money.
Like yeah,
your,
all right,
your
you
blood
hammer.
Must be boiling.
You hammer these bets.
Yeah, everyone thought I loaded up on all of them. I was like, no, that was just my four picks that I happened to pick. I didn't really go overboard on every one of them, but I did pound the over in that Philly Senators game. I thought there would be 10 goals in it. I did have two.
Okay,
times.
When you say pound it, like what's pound it? Because to me, if I bet $300 right? on a game, like I'm nervous.
If I pound it, it's anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 if I say I pounded it. So I had two G's on that over, and I don't know if you were watching. It was 3-1, and our boy Brady Tkachuk, he got two goals. And the thing is, if you bet an over under a 6.5, Paul, once the score is 3-3, you're guaranteed a winner because there are no more ties in the NHL. So once it's 3-3, you're fucking golden. You hit your bet.
You're
so
laughing.
Brady tied it up. Maybe a winner, and then I mean, it didn't matter. Oh, who won
so if a shootout win, that's going to count as a goal towards. Yes. Oh yep. Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought that didn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't statistically, but for the sake of the victory and gambling purposes, it's a win.
And for those gamblers who are looking forward to RA's gambling corner, keep in mind RA just doesn't do them every episode. He does them when he's feeling them. So if he's feeling it, and technically the first couple times you did it earlier in the season, you were saying, "Hey, if these goalies start, make the bet." But those goalies didn't end up starting, so therefore, you weren't really going to place these or recommending that people don't either. Now, transitioning out of that, by the way, congratulations. One thing I wanted to talk about is Carey Price threw a hit on a player.
Oh, yeah.
In the last game, okay? And everybody was laughing and chuckling on Twitter, and I fucking love Carey Price. But here's my problem with this is if you touch a goalie, everybody's up in arms, suspend them, throw him out of the league, he's a scumbag, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then a goalie hits a guy because he eases up, and now everyone's clowning him online. Well, I'll tell you what. If a fucking goalie, if I slowed up for, fucking made me look like a fool, well, I'm going to make sure I get him back because that's bullshit because I'm not a hypocrite. So all you people laughing and joking around about Carey Price throwing that hit, yeah, he didn't fucking smoke him. But he eased up, and then he didn't even end up getting a 2-minute minor. Like it was nothing happened. So I'm going to say like what the goalies can't be open seasons if they fucking start throwing hits.
Hey man, it's like if you're going to chuck a hit, be ready to get one back. I mean, I think that they do a pretty good job of staying out of the way, knowing that if they don't do anything to anyone, guys should treat them with respect. But if you're going to throw a hit, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see someone just completely snap and try to dummy a goalie. But still, Carey Price, it gave for a little entertainment. I'll say that for sure.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a double standard, though. I mean, if there was no whistle, I mean, it looked like it could have been interference at a minimum, but you're not going to get that call in fucking Montreal against their goalie for sure. That's not going to happen.
I was a little frustrated by it. I'm just like, hey, goalies are like the quarterbacks now of the NFL. Just and then all of a sudden, this guy interferes with a guy, and then everyone's like, aha, like it's funny online. It's like, oh, yeah? Wait till I fucking run him next time. He's not clowning me again. Austin Matthews is back, boys. He must be excellent. Hitting up the herbal active or something.
Toronto's up 1-0 early. Tavares got his 16th as we're recording right now on Wednesday night. But I think that probably...
I had actually one more thing. It's quick. I just want to give a congratulations to Rick Middleton. We talked about him earlier in the episode. Number 16 for the Boston Bruins. He's getting retired Thursday night.
We didn't
night.
Talk about him. That was with Burr. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't talk about it on the episode. But Rick Middleton, he's getting number 16 retired at the Garden on Thursday night. He retired 30 years ago, so it took quite a while for this to happen. 8 guys have won his number since. But Congrats to Nifty, man. I know you guys probably didn't see him play as much as I did, but he was a dynamic goal scorer back in the day. Probably similar to, I guess, maybe a Pat Kane today, if we're going to compare him to a modern day player. But hell of a Bruin
goal. What?
Just as far as a goal scorer, a dynamic goal scorer, yeah, I would say that. As far as making people jump out of their seat with breakaways and shit.
Nifty,
like that.
If your nickname's Nifty, you made some Kane-like moves. I'll give you that.
You backed it up, and also a shout out to Ryan Miller. He got his 373rd win. He's one behind John Van Beesbrook on number one all time among U.S. born goaltenders. So shout out to Ryan Miller for climbing that list.
And boys, before we wrap up, any more word on Nylander? I know he skated today over in Sweden. No, they're saying they're close to something. Like I'm just digging for.
I hear they're close, but I also, you know, I just don't understand the fact, and I don't understand the people who argue. All right, well, listen, Pastrnak and Gaudreau are severely underpaid now, so he should get more money than them. It doesn't matter. He has not done what either one of those guys have done. He hasn't even done what either one of those guys really – he hasn't come close to either one of those guys. So, yeah, you can look at Gaudreau and Pastrnak and say, wow, man, you know, they signed and now they're underpaid. Well, they're still plenty well off. They're gonna sign another big deal, God willing. And Nylander, to try to say he should get more than them right now, I see Toronto's side of saying – no, you shouldn't. So both sides right now, before the deadline December 1st, are saying we've moved a lot. Both sides think we've moved a lot off our original position, and now it becomes that standstill of we're not moving anymore. So it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens. The Leafs could use a D-man.
And you know what's hurting them, too, is the fact that Marner's been playing so well, they're going to have to pay that guy.
And they know they have to pay him.
And obviously more so than Nylander. Yeah. So the better he keeps playing, they're like, holy shit, man. Like this, what would you say Marner is if he keeps going? He's got to be, what, a $9 million guy?
Yep. I mean, he's top five in points right now in the league, I believe. So there comes a time when you realize, all right, well, with Matthews and Marner, that's going to be – it sounds crazy, but Taves –
12 or 20 million.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. It's just crazy. You know, the Toronto – the fact that this is happening with the Maple Leafs, too, up there, it's just – it's perfect drama for the hockey soap media opera. And the soap opera that usually kind of goes around the Leafs. But final thing before we leave, Grinnelli.
I was going to say, Austin Matthews just scored.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay.
There you go.
Jeff Bump, you're welcome.
Bump, thanks for coming.
Throw me in the signing bonus.
He ain't giving you shit. He's already bought you like five dinners. Mitch Marner's fifth in points right now, and that's not including his assist tonight. Yeah. But, all right, well, I don't often bring up the personal life too much in this, but I figured since we're recording tonight, it is my son Ryder Colin Whitney. It's his first birthday, and people always ask me, like, you know, you guys talk a little bit, you know, rough around the edges. Like, do you know, will your son listen? What's it going to be like when he hears? So who knows? Someday, hopefully he listens, but I would like maybe he'll hear this episode long in a long time in the future far away, but he'll be listening and knowing that, you know, I love him so much. So does his mom. And it's been the best year of my life. It's funny. It's, I used to rip it up, Biz. We ran wild and a lot of people say, oh, do you miss going out? And I don't really miss anything. You know, you have him, you grow up, you get married a little bit, you have a kid. I would have never gotten married if I was still playing in the NHL, but it all ended and it was time to get going in life and starting a family. So it's been the best year of my life. And, you know, having a son and being lucky and, you know, God was there to give us a healthy baby boy. It's just been an incredible year. So hopefully someday he hears this and knows he's changed our lives for the better in so many ways.
He's the only Chicklets baby, all right? You don't got any kids, right?
None that I know of.
And with that, we're out. Peace out. Thanks for listening.